Tonight on The Download, human rights activist Jamie Calvin, Cook County Clerk David Orr, and it's Friday, which means local entrepreneur Steve Gadlin jumps into the frying pan. And now, here's your host, a man who is waiting till Sunday afternoon to buy Valentine's gifts, Justin Kaufman.
Yeah, you just convince your loved ones that Sunday night is Valentine's Day. It's really just a game of chicken with the Walgreens. When do you start putting that stuff on sale? Right? Do you wait? Do they get itchy? They're like, we got to go 50% and get this stuff out on Valentine's Day? And then Kaufman wins. Ha-ha! All in the pursuit of love. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on WGN Radio with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Wow, we got a great show tonight. I'm so excited. We've got a great show to guide you into this Valentine's Day weekend. And one of the things I'm probably most excited about is that there's no Valentine's Day crazy. It's not like every segment is about, tonight we talk love. What do you love? 312-981-7200. Isn't love grand? You know what? You're going to have all that all weekend long. So let's have some, let's do something else, shall we? I think, you know what would be good? Let's talk voting. Voting is probably a good place to start. So when are we going to be able to vote for presidential candidates like we vote for American Idol? I mean, that's not that far off. And tonight we talk with Cook County Clerk David Orr about voting issues and what irregularities he's seen in his time in office. I mean, come on. He's the clerk of Cook County. The stuff that was happening in Iowa surrounding Ted Cruz about whether or not Ben Carson had dropped out or the don't go vote, that stuff is child's play to David Orr. We'll talk with David coming up here this hour. Also tonight, could Matt Forte be heading to the Packers? Come on! I don't know. I love that I'm already mad about that. Like that's such media speculation. And yet I'm mad at even that is a possibility. We'll also talk about keeping the Bulls' management accountable as the team limps figuratively and literally into the All-Star break. My guest tonight at the big table, Jamie Calvin. Calvin's the man behind the groundbreaking lawsuit that forced the Chicago police to share publicly misconduct files, and it was his work that ultimately led to the public seeing the Laquan McDonald video. He's been awarded a huge grant to keep it going, to make police accessible and accountable. Jamie has been a voice for the voiceless for almost 40 years in Chicago. I cannot wait to talk with him tonight at the big table. Tonight, we also present a new segment. All right, I'm looking forward to this. Two writers enter, one writer leaves. The old Beyond the Thunderdome. We just need Tina Turner. Bring the writers to me! Okay, new segment. One of the most popular live-lit stage shows in Chicago is called Write Club. It takes one idea, pits two writers against each other. Audience votes, prizes galore. It has been exported to different cities, and tonight we bring you the first Write Club Radio. That's right, Ian Belknap and Lindsay Moscato are here, and they're going to bring some writers, and we're going to riff off the big idea, Rise and Fall. And you know what? You're the one who gets to vote. You'll vote on whether or not the Rise writer or the Fall writer was better. The winner gets a coffee mug or something. Let's see. Still going to figure that part out. Because we can entice great writers to come in if we gave them, like, tickets to Three Dog Night or whatever. But we didn't do that, so it's probably a coffee mug. Zimmerman's frantically. What do you got, Pete? There is stuff.
We have tons of good stuff to give away.
Should we give them to writers or do we give them to the listener? I always like giving a listener. I don't want to give them to writers. Writers get the promotion.
We have a pair of tickets to see Creedence Clearwater Revisited.
What does that mean?
With founding members.
Oh, wow.
And Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Stu Cook and Doug Cosmo Clifford.
Wow. We're home in the bayou.
Yeah.
Right.
That's exactly right.
Good, good, good. Walking out that back door.
You got him.
That's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to know. Have you ever seen the rain? That's what
those
are.
You're like a huge fan.
I am. I know the whole catalog. I know the whole. I'm a huge fan of classic rock stations that play the same three songs over and over. So we'll do that. Write Club in the 9 o'clock hour. And we'll round out tonight with our man, Steve Gadlin. That's right. It's Friday night, so it's time for The Frying Pan. Tonight is definitely his night. I can feel it. I just know. Last week, you know, he did Krabby Cake. It was Krabby Cake. where you would wear a cake on your shoulder and let people know that you're crabby, so don't approach. And he got a lot of yays to start, but then it got nasty real quick. So hopefully this week, Steve will have a better idea. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martyr. And, of course, production, Pete Zimmerman, Beats by Zim. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download. All right, let's get to the show tonight, shall we? Why don't we start with the carry out? This is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Here today's top stories. In the race for president, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton debated on who was more down for the cause. And on the other side, Trump is threatening to sue Ted Cruz because he's from Canada. I don't know about you, but these are the days that make me long for 2013, when the top national political story was Obama's gray hair. Still a week till the next primary, which will be in Nevada. And I can't wait for the candidates to play blackjack, smoke indoors, and hand out flyers for prostitutes on the strip. Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders? Hillary Clinton? Closer to home, the race for Senate has been pretty quiet, as incumbent Mark Kirk is running unopposed, and Democrat Tammy Duckworth has a big lead. So why not take this opportunity to take some shots? Senator Kirk was first. He said in an interview that Duckworth was a naive fool that is not fit for office. This was all about Duckworth's comments that harsh anti-Muslim rhetoric from Senate Republicans could be causing radicalization. If this is any indication of what to expect from the upcoming general elections, I say they should debate 50 times, and swear words should be acceptable. A naive fool not fit for office. Let's face it, if being a naive fool would keep you from holding office, then we'd have a serious lawmaker shortage in this country, right? First the Olympics, now El Chapo. The Mexican cartel honcho may be extradited to the U.S. to stand trial, and all signs are pointing to New York City as the winning city. I love that we're bidding on the celebrity trial. Rom should throw in some Italian beef and maybe some Blackhawks tickets. Maybe Vince Vaughn could narrate the trial. Ronnie Woo Woo could help take El Chapo from the limo to the courtroom. Woo! Limo! Woo! Courtroom! Hey, everybody! Welcome to Kanye Day! Wait, I thought that was yesterday. Or was it the day before? Kanye West's long-awaited album is supposed to drop today, a day after he had his big fashion show at Madison Square Garden. Did you see the clothes? Look good! Although the Kardashian women all took part and it looked like they were one big advertisement for Beige Le Eggs. That's how you say that, right? Pantyhose? Le Eggs. Le Eggs. So where's the album? Well, Kanye's remastering, which is hip-hop code for napping. In weather, dangerously cold tonight. It's so cold that I bought a hairdryer and some saran wrap for the windows. If all else fails, I'll just put up a garbage bag or maybe just tape my comforter to the door frame and cordon off the whole front room. That's what we would do. My crappy Lincoln Square place back in college. Good party, though. Real good party. In sports, Matt Forte. It's hard because the Bears were so mediocre with precision. And so now the hopes to change that. But the problem is that the only guy that wasn't mediocre was Matt Forte. So naturally, he's got to go. I get it. If Ryan Pace can bring in a playmaker free agent, or maybe two, for what we would have paid Forte, great. But if this is just about saving money so Virginia can pop some bottles of Chris at the club, nah, man, not cool. Now that Forte's gone, he'll probably sign with the Packers. You know it's going to happen. I think it's time now to rank him. And based on his 8 years and some record-breaking stats, I say Matt Forte is better than Neil Anderson. Huh? Peyton Sayers Forte. Congrats, Matt. You did your job. You never complained. And we were lucky to have you in Chicago. In other football news, I saw a poster that the former Bear Adrian Peterson was signing autographs at the Jewel. Yeah. Not the real Adrian Peterson, but the Bear Adrian Peterson. The one with the stutter, yeah. The Hawks got the Ducks tomorrow after they lost to the Stars yesterday. UC's going to be rocking. Northwestern starts its new streak tomorrow as they take on Illinois for the in-state rival game. We hate that this is where we're at, but we are. I got a lot of confidence in the Cats. They got to win out, and that includes big games against Michigan and Purdue, and they're going to have to upset somebody in the Big Ten tourney. But you know what? That's not impossible. I know I sound unrealistic, but this could be the making of a great Chicago sports story. Remember in 2016 when Northwestern looked out of it and then they ran the table, won the Big Ten tourney, and then, well, lost to UTEP in the first round of the Big Dance? But remember that? It was great. 2016. We got your back, Northwestern. Come on, do this. And finally tonight, it's Valentine's Day weekend, also known as Walgreens Day. Lovers rejoice, exchange chocolates, hugs, and buy each other crappy throwaway teddy bears. For those who don't celebrate, good news. The Easter candy's already out. Well, that's the carryout for February 12th, 2016.
Enjoy the heart-shaped pizzas, because really, that's the best thing about Valentine's Day.
Coming up, we're going to talk with Cook County Clerk David Orr, followed by human rights activist Jamie Calvin, then Right Club, and then the frying pan. It's Friday night. It's the download on WGN Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, you know what? The presidential primaries are in full swing. Ours coming up here on March 15th, and that means you got till February 16th to register to vote. How do I know this? Because I pay attention to my clerk, my Cook County clerk. David Orr wants you to know about what you need to know about voting, and he's here with me tonight on The Download. Clerk Orr, good to see you.
Nice to see you.
So what is the February 16th deadline? Why don't we start there?
Okay, first, that's the deadline for what we call traditional voter registration. Mm-hmm. That's where people can go to City Hall. Many kids go to libraries. Deputy registrars out there, that's when they turn in their stuff. So we encourage everyone to do that, okay? However, we've gone way beyond that in Illinois now, because even starting on February 17th, is what's called grace period registration.
Okay. Now,
but I want to make it get it done by the 16th to be safe. But on the 17th, but there it's only to a few locations where someone can go in, because Illinois law has gotten much better over the last few years. You can go in and you can register and vote at the same time. And then come February 29th, when early voting starts, grace period will be taking place in all those sites too.
So you're giving me no incentive to go early. I might as well just wait until
the last day. Can make it harder. For example, if you right now, okay, you're thinking, what am I going to do to register? First of all, let's make it easy for you. You can register online. New law in Illinois, much better for young people. You grab your phone, grab your tablet.
And just do it right there.
You can register online right there. Now, there is one caveat there. Only people can register that way are folks that are already have a driver's license or a state ID, but that's right. The vast majority of people.
Gosh, I remember when I was turning 18 and getting ready to vote, you'd have to go to, like, the grocery store. They'd set up, like, the table.
We did that.
Yeah, right, exactly. How far have we come?
When you were 18, what are you, 21 now? Way back, and I was around 91, 92,
we did
all those grocery things. Now, we've come a lot because we're using technology. Okay, so you can register online, which makes it real easy. So the difference between registering now before the 16th, you can stop at City Hall. You can stop at Evanston City Hall. You can stop at a library. You can order. But when it comes to the 17th, that'll only be downtown City of Chicago's offices or my offices downtown. So then when it comes to the 29th, when early voting starts, you can also go to all the early voting sites, 40-some in suburban Cook, 50 in the city of Chicago, and you can do what's called the grace period. And the kicker now, as you know, in Illinois, we now allow people to register and vote on Election Day.
Mm-hmm. And we saw that in the municipal election, yes. Yeah.
And now it'll be in your local precinct, in your home precinct.
I mean, I just feel like, you know, as we start thinking about the future, I feel like we're 20 years away from doing it American Idol style. Where we just, you know, like it's time to go, and we upload the app and we press yes for Hillary Clinton.
I hope it's not
like,
that long.
Yeah, I mean, you see us moving in more of that direction?
We're definitely moving. Here's the thing. We're moving almost in two different directions. First of all, election equipment, a lot of the places around the country have backed away from some of it because of scandals. I think most of those they're not real scandals. Mm-hmm. They're misunderstandings of it. So we've got that view. The same time, we got all these people. I'm working with a group right now that believes it is eminent. They are going to have all these big campaigns. There's national money going into mm-hmm. it. But it'll be a while because we say, well, people bank by phone. But do we know how many scandals we have in the banking? Do we know how many data has been stolen? So banks, they can do that. They can afford that. If they make a mistake or somebody rips you off, they'll still pay for it.
Right.
An election, you don't have those options. You have one time, one day to do it. It's not banking every day. So the best minds are working on it. I do believe we'll get there, but we have to overcome. We have to find a way with the great technical experts in this country to make sure it is safe.
Well, I have to ask the question because it seems like incumbent politicians, it's almost against their, and I hate to say this, but it's almost against their interest to encourage technological advances, because that means that everybody's going to vote. And there always has been this sort of suppression movement in this country that seems like once people get in office, they're like, you know what? Maybe you don't have to vote, because incumbents, you know, actually get a better standing on the fact when voter turnout is low. So how do you make sure that this is financed and the resources are available for technological advancement in voting?
Well, I'd like to claim that we've been pretty successful. I'm an incumbent for a long time. We've been pretty successful in getting the incumbents to pass all these laws in Illinois. And it hasn't been all Democrats, although they've been much better at it. Because when you can convince people, I know when I first got interested in motor voter, there was a gentleman who was the Secretary of State of the state of Oregon. He was Republican, and he was supportive of that. That was way back in the early 90s. So, yes, there are people willing to do that. And right now there's a movement around the country called ERIC, and that's basically it's a group of states that band together to share data. Now, what they do with the sharing the data is they keep their list cleaner. All of a sudden, because I know as county clerk we keep records of who dies in Cook County, mm-hmm. but I don't know the nerve of these people that die elsewhere. Okay, I don't have this record. Right. So now we're joined. The legislature has voted to join ERIC. So now people that die in other states will have that information. People move to other states. So instead of having 50,000 people on your rolls that have been long gone from Cook County or perhaps passed away, we can take those people off. We're also moving to where we can register them automatically when they move. None of this, all this paper and hassles and so forth, because that's what we're going on right now. Thousands and thousands of people that either your listeners or have to register, they just registered last year.
Right,
they're going to register again because they move. We're changing all that. Now you move from Chicago to Bloomington, you keep your registration. We do it automatically, seamless. So that's the technology is really helping on those things.
Let me ask you, you know, as you and other clerks from other counties and around the country, with all the sort of changes and investments and technological advancements, are you seeing, in early voting especially, but are you seeing more turnout? Are you seeing in a more consistent way voting being just more?
Well, here's the problem. I'd have to say generally no. The people that have vote by mail in their states, they believe that has engendered a greater turnout. There's lots of controversy, and part of the controversy is because it's really hard to compare apples to apples. You know, for example, in this November, we'll get a 70% plus turnout mm-hmm. for president. But when it comes to gubernatorial elections,
sure.
we only might get 50%. And then, for example, this election coming up, there are not a lot of challenges on it. So when you're doing the analysis, you have to factor that in. In local elections, for example, sometimes we have over 60% of all the races with no contest. But it's really not that bad. It's maybe, well, there's three people running for Winnetka Park District. There are three people known. There's no complaints. So they're going to elect the same people and say, why go out? So to do the analysis carefully, you have to factor in all that. That's mm-hmm. why there's not really a lot of reliable studies. I do believe the chances, of course, dramatically increase of increasing the turnout if, in fact, you can eliminate some of these barriers like I'm talking about.
Yeah, right.
So we try and make those accommodations.
Right.
Okay. We don't want to coddle people. We want to understand in a democracy we're one of the few in the world that votes on a workday. Okay. So that's why we have the early voting. So and that now everyone in Illinois can vote by mail. So these things are good because it gives legitimate people a chance to do things when you're afraid that your mom's going to be sick, you're going to have mm-hmm. to go out to help her, and you're going to miss election day. The main problem, I think, in our lack of voting has much more to do not with these things. Voter suppression will hurt, but not with these things. It's mostly our system has been kidnapped by the big money.
Yeah.
The big money means a couple of very dangerous things for democracy. Number one means eternal campaigns. They never stop.
Right, right.
You know, other countries have elections. Okay, we're going to have election in 3 months,
right.
6 weeks. Boom. There was Republican counties, for example, getting ready. They were having campaigns. They were spending millions of dollars a year and a half before the election. So, for one, the campaigns are too long, and not that they even bring that much clarity
right.
to things.
Like,
they're too long, and they cost a fortune. And the only reason you get candidates now running for president who get 1% of the vote in Iowa, and the only reason they're there is because they have billionaire backers.
They tried to go to the Supreme Court with this. The president's been involved a little bit in executive action rumors here and there. But there really doesn't seem there's a movement to change that.
Oh, I think there's an enormous movement to change that. It's just difficult because the court, in one of the worst decisions in the court's history, they basically said that money is speech. And if you ain't got it, you don't have any influence. And if you got billions, you can use other influence. Mm-hmm. A terrible decision, I think, by almost anybody.
Because we see the outcome. I mean, it continues, but you see now it's all super PACs and billions of dollars. The normal person says, I want to run for office, even at the aldermanic level, is finding themselves, it just becomes completely not worth the money.
And so going back into my frustration with the future of our democracy, the long campaigns, the money it costs, which means regular people can't run, but even worse is that then money controls the agenda of government. That's why a lot of people don't vote. That helps to generate this cynicism, this frustration. Now, the other side, it's kind of good. These campaigns are bringing out people. They're bringing out some excitement. But if we don't handle the money part, I think we're in big trouble.
Let me ask you, you know, we saw in Iowa particularly the same stories again. I mean, Donald Trump has actually been great for the presidential run because he seems to speak whatever he said. You know, like he doesn't have a filter. But he came after Ted Cruz right away. He said he's dirty tricks, dirty politics. He was lying and he sent out flyers that were misleading. He stole Iowa. Iowa's interesting, the caucus, because it's run by the parties. There is no Cook County clerk that says you can and cannot do this. When you see those stories coming out of as candidates, essentially, getting close to the line, what's your thought on that?
Well, first of all, to understand that when it comes to parties, and remember, our country, in some ways it's good, but in a lot of ways it's not, that this whole states' rights thing. So we allow all these different things to happen in states. So there they have a caucus thing. Other places, the parties may say, you know what, you, the Democratic Party, pays for the election. Now, here in Illinois, we have a series of elections. Everybody knows about it. They're all paid for. Hmm. They're run through the county clerks and others. Yeah.
So there are some places where the actual political parties pay for the elections.
That's right. And there was a big controversy. I think it was either in Nevada or Arizona about, well, we don't have enough money, so you got to pay for it. And then if the parties are paying for it, that, you know, anyway, it there's a lot of variance because we have different state things. But in the long run, while we want to engender kind of excitement and creativity at the states, we do need to have more universal understanding of the rules. It shouldn't be that in some states you can vote early and some states you can't. In mm-hmm. some states, students, you know, have to go through all these hurdles, and some states they don't. But because of the political reality, and no offense, because Democrats in Chicago in the past certainly suppressed votes of those who didn't like. Now it seems to be the Republican Party around the country, for the most part, suppressing votes. So it's really difficult, and there's always those who want to win. Sometimes what the voters don't understand is there's enormous power in government.
And it used to be, I mean, the stories here, the Democratic machine stories are legendary, you know, getting, you know, two votes, three votes, using...
I had to fight against it all my life. Yes.
But, I mean, it's notorious, but how are machines today, whether Democrat, Republican, suppressing vote? What do they do that are the tricks that we all know here in Chicago? What do they do to keep voters away from the polls?
Well, the single biggest thing in the country, I'll do that quickly, I think people know, is the voter ID. There's a lot of confusion about that. See, it's one thing to say, well, people should have IDs. Everyone has to have an ID when they register. Mm-hmm. But to have a photo ID, the theory of that is so you can't impersonate me. You can't pretend like you're David Orr and come in and take my vote.
Right.
The difficulty is you need to have vigilance about fraud, absolutely, no matter where you are, because people want very desperately to win. But a lot of these movements around the state, and particularly in Texas and North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, these are blatant attempts to prevent some people from voting.
Like certain ethnic groups.
Well, in other words, you got to be careful. Like, for example, in Chicago, let's go back to the older days. Well, it used to be you might pay people to vote, okay? In particular, you might pay an African-American for their vote. Okay, come afterwards and get your $10. But if you remember Harold Washington and all that talk about the wink, okay, we'll take their damn money, but still vote for me. So then there was cases where precinct captains, instead of paying people to vote, pay them not to vote. Okay, you only get your money as long as I make sure you didn't vote. Now, you can only do that if you know, for example, that African-Americans as a whole are going to vote this way. You can't do it with everybody else.
Right.
So a lot of your suppressing movements are when one side or the other wants to depress a certain group. So we still have to deal with all sorts of tricks. Mm. There's people that, particularly minority communities, will say if you go to vote in poorer neighborhoods, that the police are going to be looking for people that have tickets that day. There's been people in Cook County and Chicago, even in recent years, have put out flyers with the wrong election date, the place.
Right.
So fortunately, those are not that big.
Is that the kind of stuff that you come in on? Is that the clerk's office? You go, whoa, you can't put this flyer out.
What do you do? We do not have a system to make people tell the truth. It's one of the worst things we have, and it's really hard. Other countries try and do more than we do. But we're always nervous about censorship. Other countries, most of them will say, you know, their elections are usually on weekends or a Sunday.
Three-day agenda, right.
That's right. So starting Friday, no more commercials, no nothing. So there can't be something last minute, some lie that you can't. Mm-hmm. And those tricks, they played that on me all the time. There'd be the flyer that goes out that said something terribly untrue on the Sunday before the election. How do you respond? So we can do more, but there are still people trying to play those tricks. But by and large, a lot of that stuff has been cleaned up.
To your efforts, I'm sure. The Cook County Clerk, David Orr.
We try.
You know, I'm fascinated. It's interesting because I'm sure between now and, you know, March 15th when the primary, we will see more flyers. We will see more ads here in Illinois because, you know, right now it's still further out. So you're going to have your eyes peeled for us. We're going to let you take care of that. And we'll take care of other things.
You know, I can try and educate people. If there's something that's clearly breaking the law, we'll send it to the state's attorney's office. But a lot of this stuff is not necessarily breaking the law. So the role of the media, and you and others, I think, do a good job, you know, without trying to take a lot of sides. But when people make these charges, particularly in the important rates, like the state's attorney race coming up, vetting it a little bit, you know, trying to be a fair, impartial
fact check it.
You guys can do it.
Right.
That's hard for us.
You're seeing more and more
of
that happen with debates and otherwise.
Yes.
That seems to be like a popular thing, fact check the debate. Well, maybe we should start fact checking the flyers.
Well,
I think we got a new segment, Pete. What do you think?
I think it'd be great, you know, or the campaign literature or
I
the
like
ads.
That.
Yeah.
So. All right. David Orr, Cook County Clerk, wants you to register by February 16th, but there's other options otherwise afterwards. But it gets tougher. And it probably is more of a pain in the butt for you.
Yeah, but that's okay. The point is we want to get everybody registered. We'll work hard. Not worried about that. We just want people to understand their options. And if they have questions, if you're in suburban Cook County, look at cookcountyclerk.com. Okay, and if you're in the city of Chicago, you can do a chicagoelections.com.
Okay.
There's a lot of information on those websites about election, you know, where you vote. If you're registered, if you're not even certain, you can call and you know, go through the little numbers, and they'll tell you that. So we just want to help as much as possible. There'll be a lot of questions to answer before then. But the bottom line is don't be afraid to ask. You've got three ways to vote now in Illinois. You can vote on Election Day. You can vote early, starting February 29th. And everybody, if they so choose, can vote by mail. And you can even request your, what we used to call absentee, you can request your mail ballot online now, too. Whip out your phone. Punch a few numbers.
You got it.
And it'll speed up your getting that mail ballot.
David Orr, thanks for being here.
You bet. Thank you.
It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up 9 o'clock, Ian Belknap and Lindsay Moscato come back with Right Club. They've exported their live lit show, one of the most successful shows in Chicago. It's at the Hideout. It's packed. It's essentially two writers take on one topic. So you have like, you know, what they're going to do tonight, rise and fall. And they do it on stage, and it's such a good time, and it's one of the best shows in Chicago. It's written up. Everybody loves it. And they've started new write clubs in different cities. And tonight is the first time that they're bringing it to the radio, which is a perfect thing. I mean, we're going to have two writers in, one that will represent Rise, the other will represent Fall, and then 312-981-7200, you at home, decide which one you like better. The winner gets nothing. Pete's got a bunch of good prizes, but I don't know. I just feel bad about giving writers prizes. I feel like, you know, prize enough that they, I don't know, wrote something. From one writer to another. That's coming up at 9 o'clock. Also, we'll talk with Panjanovic somewhere in there, too, about the Matt Forte and the Chicago Bulls All-Star break as well. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is a writer and human rights activist. And You know, he's not fighting for justice and equality in faraway lands or third world countries. No, Jamie Calvin's work is right here in Chicago. He's the man behind the Invisible Institute and the Citizens Police Data Project, which has just awarded the highly coveted Knight News Challenge grant $400,000 to continue their work on making police misconduct information accessible and, in the bigger picture, reforming police accountability. Calvin has been working on behalf of Chicago's voiceless for decades. He's fought this fight on several levels. He's taken the fight to academics. He's set up shop in the CHA housing to be an advocate for residents. And recently, he took on politicians, police, prosecutors, in breaking the story of Laquan McDonald. He's the first journalist to get the autopsy report, which really will forever change the way police and the public interact. Jamie Calvin has also been a source for journalists in town to hook up with voices that are not usually heard, or to bring journalists into communities to gain access and observe firsthand. I was one of those journalists back in, I think it was 1999, somewhere around 98, 99. And what we did is Jamie and I worked on an audio documentary about the final days of Stateway Garden, which was at 35th and State Street. I was just a public radio producer who was tasked with covering the city, but admittedly, I was 23, maybe. You know, I had not seen the city. I have no, be honest about that. So I didn't really know it. But I saw in that experience a part of the city that kind of helped me understand where I live. And I'll be forever grateful for that experience. And Jamie Calvin, he's my guest tonight at the big table. Jamie, good to see you.
It's great to be with you.
First of all, let's talk about the grant. Congratulations, $400,000 from the Knight News Challenge to continue the work that really came out of your lawsuit to get the FOIAs public for misconduct files from the police department.
Right. There's a 10-year legal battle that culminated in Calvin versus Chicago, a decision of the Illinois Appellate Court that established the principle that police misconduct records belong to the public.
Right. Before that,
the city had fiercely resisted and fought forever to release that information. So this is a major legal watershed. And when it came down, I mean, it was extraordinary and wonderful. I love that my name is associated with it. I'm not one for titles, but I kind of like Calvin versus Chicago. And and after it came down, I and my colleagues sort of confronted a challenge because we now had access to this information, you know, loads and loads. Just,
right.
You know, extraordinary amount.
And you've seen some stories come out of that. I mean, we've seen...
Oh, there have been tons of stories.
Yeah, all the local journalists have, because that was opened up, you've seen so a lot of the stories you've seen about misconduct and police officers, or even the information that the police officer involved in the Laquan McDonald had a record of misconduct.
So everybody now uses this information.
Right.
And what we confronted after this great and in some ways unexpected victory was the case established a principle of transparency. This belongs to the public. But, you know, that's like saying you're free because you have the First Amendment. If you don't exercise the First Amendment, you know, you're not free. And so our challenge was how to operationalize that principle of transparency.
Right.
And that's what led to the creation of the Citizens Police Data Project. And I urge people to Google it and take a look at it, because a lot of effort, care, thought, design, analytic capacity went into building this in the hope that we could create something that made this information immediately useful to multiple constituencies, obviously lawyers, journalists, but above all citizens, mm-hmm. that this could be a tool.
Because really it's just by releasing the information, it's just a data dump. If you don't actually categorize it or make it look good, people are never going to see it.
If we just put up Excel files of the information, it's the same information, a handful of people would be able to use it. So a lot of care has gone into building a really welcoming, inviting, interesting, engaging web interface and tools for people to explore the data. So that's the work that the Knight Foundation, you know, we entered into this competition that the Knight Foundation holds every year, the Knight News Challenge. And, you know, I think it was like 1,400 applicants or something people submitted. And in the end, they chose, I'm not sure the exact number, I think there were eight major projects that they funded. So it's a, you know, mm-hmm. really intense competition. And they provided us with funding to continue to build this public resource. And, you know, you're a journalist. You know that most journalists, when they get
information like this through Freedom of Information Act requests, actually then hold on to it and treat it as proprietary.
Right.
Even something like the NSA paper, you know, that's still
You did
by,
work. I mean, we just had Mick and Ben in here talking about the work that it takes to get a FOIA.
It takes work.
Always in challenge.
And journalists, you sort of, you know, you think of yourself as a kind of agent of the public interest, but most, you know, any newspaper, most people would hold on to this, harvest it for stories. I intervened in court, in federal court, and then state court on behalf of the public. And our stance is that when we said public, we meant public, that this information belongs to the public. That's the
court. Not to journalists, not to not people who can just read the stuff.
And
right.
So we're sort of curators of the information. Right. We're stewards. We take care of it. We keep building this public resource. And that's kind of the spirit in which we approach the Knight Foundation. That this is a public, it's like the national parks or something. You know, this belongs to the public. And
that's
we
a great
need
to way
make
to put it.
It
yeah.
We need to make it accessible, usable, legible to the public.
Jamie Calvin's my guest at the big table tonight. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's start at the beginning. I mean, let's talk about your career. I also want to talk about your time at the CHAB from around the whole thing. Jamie Calvin, writer and human rights activist, the man behind the Invisible Institute and the Citizens Police Data Project, in studio tonight. Stay with us. That was a tough one for me, Pete. I don't know what happened there. I love that place. There's so much. You tripped up on one word,
well,
yak,
the,
and all
mean,
that.
The duck feet and the heat. And the,
it's
the
a lot
hips
going on there.
The,
the hips and the yak. I guess tonight.
It's like it's like performance.
Jamie Calvin's a writer and human rights activist. He's the man behind the Invisible Institute and also the Citizens Police Data Project, which just got the Knight News Challenge, $400,000 to help, I guess, streamline and create more technology and tools to like get the public to interact with this material.
Yeah, I mean, I think this it's a strangely it's a project that has a kind of twin aspect in that we're using technology and sort of advanced technology to make this information available. It's also really important that it be a kind of person-to-person organizing strategy. So Knight's supporting that as well, the sort of outreach and building relationships that enable people to make really productive use of the data. I mean, you know, journalists and lawyers within like 48 hours of the launch of the database were making use of it.
Right.
Just being cited in story after story, not about us, but about
you just police.
You provide
the app, yeah. Right.
And within less than a week, lawyers were attaching exhibits to their motions in civil rights cases drawn from the database. I think to get citizens, especially in the neighborhoods most affected, where people are just so alienated from the police and from really from any notion that they could effectively get redress when abuse occurs. That's really where this Knight money
where it all comes from.
Go.
And it even goes back in your career.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes back. I mean, I want to talk about your dad and I want to talk about, you know, finishing his work in the 70s and 80s. But there's really kind of draws from your time at CHA, at
Completely.
Stateway Gardens.
So, you know, it's even kind of stunning to me to look back. But where this story begins is in high-rise public housing, the last chapter of high-rise public housing, when you and I first met, you know, the last 10 years, plan for transformation, the city commits to a policy of tearing down all of high-rise public housing.
So this would be when, you know, if you're going down the Dan Ryan Stateway Gardens, Robert Taylor Homes.
So you had this extraordinary, I mean, now it takes an act of imagination to remember what was here, you know, where you came to visit me. You had a more than 2 mile concentration of high rise after high rise after high rise along South State Street, referred to as South State Street Corridor. And it was in precisely the footprint of the old Black Belt, you know, under segregation. The poorest, you know, it was the largest concentration of poverty in the country, largest concentration of public housing in the country. I've used the image of like an armada of boat people offshore. I mean, it was just this amazing, amazing phenomena in the middle of the city, but it might as well have been the other side of the moon for most people. People saw it driving by. On the expressway.
Yeah, right,
because these developments, both south side and west side, were sort of contained by expressway moats. They functioned as kind of moats, and that's where people saw it.
It's hard for me to fathom not for people in Chicago not remembering that, because that was such a big part of the city, even architecturally coming in from the big expressways to be able to see that. But that's so
but
interesting.
The
teardowns,
you know, but think about it. It's so disappeared. I mean, it's as disappeared as the Warsaw Ghetto disappeared. And so, you know, I spent many years there, as you know, immersed and had an office and was there daily. And over time, I witnessed patterns of policing and just daily forms of abuse, of excessive force, brutality, kind of racist utterance, open corruption, you know, shaking down young men in the drug trade and not making arrests. And what was, you know, it was a cumulative thing. It wasn't like a light bulb went off. It's over time you see it. And what I saw, and I saw it in the flesh and in this visceral form, and it was not a word I used at the time, I saw what impunity looks like. You know, impunity is this concept really important in human rights work of no fear of consequences. You know, the freedom to abuse people, toy with people, exploit people, violate their rights without any fear of consequences, that there would be discipline or punishment or that you even be identified. High-rise public housing at the end of, you know, in that final chapter, there was complete impunity for abusive officers. They could do anything that they wanted. And so the question that formed for me in the precise years when you and I, you know, worked together was, what set of, I know I'm seeing this, I'm, you know.
Yeah,
I'm
saw
a,
it. Yeah.
I'm a professional observer. Yeah. I'm there every day. I see it year after year. I'm documenting it. I know this is real. What set of institutional conditions would have to exist? How would the world have to be organized for this actually to be happening?
Because we're talking about, I mean, and you see it, it could be, you know, squads that would just pop in. And to give a picture, and I remember this so starkly, but I mean, when it would get darker, a lot of, I mean, it was kind of like an open drug trade.
Oh, that was the one, and it was so a vice zone.
This isn't like, not everyone was innocent.
It was a vice zone. Yeah. No, it was allowed to be a vice zone. And it was contained, it was like, my understanding of how the townships were policed in South Africa under apartheid, it was a containment strategy.
So they contained it, said this is where there's going to be,
and as you long can as hear, it doesn't spill out.
And I remember it so vividly, the calls.
Yeah.
So it'd be like a call, like, we wouldn't say heroin, but whatever the
No, they would say, they would actually say the name. So every drug line in every building, there were names for different brands of drugs. And, you know, they would be bizarre. The most popular heroin in the building where I had my office was called Dogface. So you have people like medieval criers shouting out Dogface, 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 or Titanic, or USDA, or actually one of the, during the run-up to the 2008 campaigns, one of the, you know, the national campaign, one of the most popular drug lines on the South Side was called Obama. So there's all these different brands. And the guys actually wore, you know, Yes We Can T-shirts and sweatshirts as a form of advertising. And when challenged, they could say, oh, no, we're just supporting the black candidate from the South Side.
Well, and so what you saw there was police coming into that environment. So there could be an argument to be said that they kind of created this area that was a cordoned off area that was for drugs. And yes, they operated in impunity because everything about it was illegal.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think one of the things we know about police abuse, both various forms of brutality and exploitation of people and corruption, is it does tend to gravitate towards the drug trade. I mean, the war on drugs has created a space for various kinds of abuse. I would also say, though, that, you know, we're going to talk more about the failures of supervision, investigation, discipline, and a lot of my work has been focused on that and documenting it, and, you know, our database is about that. But it's important to also remember that what really ultimately confers impunity on abusive officers is the social status of the victims.
Yeah.
So if you have a population as abandoned, disenfranchised, stigmatized, assumed to be criminal as people in public housing, the police can do
assumed to be criminal, because that's really where the turning point was as well, because you would see families or working mothers or people who had nothing to do, and you knew this from being in they had nothing to do with what was happening in the drug trade, and they were treated the same way.
Absolutely. And you know, I mean, that was a population mostly of women and children. And you had, you know, you had men who were mostly nomadic, not on the lease, and you had this underground criminal economy. But what tended to happen in radically happened in public perception of those communities, which were communities, as you came to know, as complex, as rich in human variety as any community. So, you know, were there monsters there? Sure, like there are in Highland Park. But there were also lovely people who it would be, you know, make your life to know, and everything in between. And our vision of those places became so one-dimensional that these were kind of, they weren't even communities. They were criminal conspiracies, and everybody was implicated.
Well, let's take a break. We'll hit the news here, and then when we come back, let's talk more about that. Jamie Calvin is a writer and human rights activist. He's a man behind Invisible Institute and the Citizens Police Data Project, which just won a $400,000 grant from the Knight News Challenge. When we come back, more with Jamie Calvin here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With me, Jamie Calvin, writer, human rights activist, man behind the Invisible Institute, also the Citizens Police Data Project, which just was awarded the highly coveted Knight News Challenge grant, $400,000, to bring more of the information that they have about police misconduct to the masses, to the public, which is who you were advocating for. Jamie, we had the news stopped this conversation about the CHA and about your time there. And what was interesting about it, we were getting to that, was supervision. Yeah. Because you do have police officers who, you know, are working with impunity because they do feel like they've set up an illegal kind of drug trade, and they're kind of need to be in control of it. So all bets are off. But when we think about that, there have to be police super, I wouldn't go as high as superintendents, but sergeants and bosses and others that sort of are in charge of those police officers.
Right. And I think that's the issue that we began to explore through litigation, through investigative journalism, is, you know, what kind of structures or absence of structures would allow for this to be going on? I mean, after all, the police are a paramilitary organization with, you know, all these levels of mm-hmm. authority, and people give orders, and yet this kind of behavior is going
right.
on
it's in
certain spaces.
That's a great way to put it. I mean, there's no rogue.
So what's what's going on? And so, you know, what a lot of the focus of my work since then has been on, and colleagues, and a lot of the litigation we've been involved in multiple federal civil rights suits, has been challenging the sort of systemic conditions that allow for abuse, the absence of effective supervision, the absence of rigorous internal investigations of citizen complaints, the absence of meaningful discipline when somebody is found to have committed abuse. And, you know, I urge people to go to our website, the Citizens Police Data Project, because we have various of the sort of aggregate statistics, and they're stunning. You know, the police aren't wrong. I mean, before this huge upheaval that we're mm-hmm. in now, they weren't wrong to feel like they had virtual impunity, very little chance of being detected,
right.
if detected.
That's the big C
discipline.
Word, the culture word that gets thrown around, like, how are we going to change the culture? That's
right.
what we're talking about.
Right.
The idea of how police officers are being supervised, how they feel when they are in situations where it's gray.
Yeah.
You know, and how they react to that.
And I think the other thing that's important to point out is, and I say this with no intent to minimize how grave the problem is. In fact, I think this is a way of emphasizing it, that, and we have statistics that demonstrate this, the very substantial majority of police officers don't get a lot of complaints. I don't have the exact numbers at the top of my head, but it's roughly 80, you know, upwards of 80% of police officers in the course of their entire careers get between 0 and 4 complaints. 90% of officers get less than 10%. 10 complaints. But then there are, you know, other officers, and almost always groups of officers, because this is not police abuse. Serious police abuse is very rarely an individual lone wolf kind of thing. It's groups. It's
right.
teams of officers. And you have officers who have extraordinary numbers of complaints. And again, we've had instances of officers who are finally criminally prosecuted. They stumble and get caught and are criminally prosecuted. And they're not caught by their department. They're caught by some other, you know, agency of law enforcement. And then there's a look back at their complaint history.
Right.
And you realize, I mean, remember the special operations scandal in 2007. You look back at the history, and Jerry Finnegan, who was the kind of alpha dog in that racket within the special operations section, had, I don't know, 60, 70 complaints that were, none of which had ever been sustained. He'd never been disciplined. And you looked at what he was ultimately criminally charged with and convicted of, and all of the complaints, the vast majority of complaints, were for that precise conduct. And they'd just been blown off. So there were so many points at which the system could have intervened and stopped
but
him.
But it didn't. But I guess, like you said, I mean, this is not, you're not talking about a low-rent theater company that doesn't know who their boss is.
Yeah.
This is the police department. Yeah. There are levels of management at every stage. Right. I mean,
so it's a broken, I mean, I used to say, I used to say, actually, I almost said it again out of habit. I used to say of the sort of accountability system and regime that it was a broken system. And then I realized that doesn't really describe it. You know, broken suggests that it sort of malfunctioned. This is a system that's a well, or was until it blew up recently, mm-hmm. you know, a well-functioning system, but for ends that were antithetical to the public interest. This was a system for making complaints go away. Think if you were a corporation and you have customers and you have tens of thousands of complaints from your customers. I mean, that actually is precious information. Corporations call that quality control. It matters to your bottom right. line. It matters to your efficacy. To, you know, so what's been so dysfunctional about this dimension of the police department and related agencies is that they've kind of blinded themselves to information of immense value, and not just to citizens who might be abused, but to the officers themselves. You know, officers can sometimes just kind of drift into patterns of behavior. If there were an intervention, if there were a serious,
we heard about that,
a serious reprimand. Jason Van Dyke.
You hear about the overworked or in situations.
Oh, you're stressed out and something.
Yeah.
But you know, an intervention, or you get drawn into the wrong cohort of officers who are dirty, a young officer. You know, the extraordinary thing, so they have all of this information coming from complaints, tens of thousands of complaints, and they do no pattern analysis, by which I mean if an officer had a lot of complaints, you would intervene. If a group of officers had a significant number of complaints each, so it can't just be a statistical anomaly, something's going on with mm-hmm. that group. If an officer who's otherwise been apparently doing fine has a sudden spike in complaints, and very importantly, the particular character of the complaints. It's not just the number of complaints. You know, if you had an officer had, say, 8 complaints and they were all for sexual assault or, you know, I mean, that's a pretty pronounced, and they're all coming from different individuals who don't know each other. That's really significant information, and the system has consistently just kind of blown it off, made it disappear.
Or didn't organize it or underfunded it or just didn't find it to be a priority in the police department. What you're doing with this data, I mean, this seems to have municipal advantage in the way that, you know, the police department could use the pattern analysis and be able to go,
well, that's a
bad idea. Don't do that anymore. Right?
What we're trying to do actually with the project, in addition to just providing a tool for people who can use it, is it's a demonstration project of what the city and what the police department could be doing with this data if they were to connect the dots, if they wanted to turn data into meaningful knowledge for, you know, managing this institution and its relationship with citizens. And, you know, and that is a, I mean, again, I urge people to look at the site. It's a really fascinating ongoing project to show what this information
could be. I believe it's the third time you've been on with me in this less than a year. And every time I'm like, oh, you got to come in studio. And now I'm like, next, you got to come back and we got to do like 2 hours. Like, sure, just make this a Jamie Calvin show. Let me ask you, because, you know, I kind of hinted at you have a background in advocacy and activism because you worked on your father's project when he died, and it was mid-70s? Or
yeah, so, yeah. I was very close to my father, who was a law professor at the University of Chicago, a constitutional scholar, and wrote a great deal about the First Amendment. He died very young, you know, substantially younger than I am now. And in the last years of his life was working on a sort of intellectual history of the First Amendment. But he was he wrote a lot for magazines. He wasn't an academic type writer. And he died in the middle of this book that he had invested so much of himself in, and left a 1,400-page first draft. It was incomplete and with gaps. And I spent more than a decade just immersing myself in First Amendment law, in his work, and finishing that book. And it was published in the late 80s under the title A Worthy Tradition.
Let me ask you, yeah. You know, for the work that you spent in First Amendment, yeah. To the work that you're doing now on the street, giving yeah. voice to the voiceless, you know, do they have similarities? Do they connect? Or is there a time for you, which one do you prefer?
You know, it's actually very continuous for me. I mean, that work on my father's book was this incredible immersion, and I think a formative, truly formative phase in my life that's foundational for everything that comes after. And he had this notion that the First Amendment was not just a body of law, but was a tradition of the society, which means every generation has to renew that tradition. And when I finished the book, you know, I'm not a lawyer, I'd weirdly become this kind of expert in the First Amendment that time. And there were, you know, there were law schools that were prepared to shape programs for me. And, you know, and I had this sort of obvious avenue to be the kind of journalist who comments on First Amendment cases and write, you know, and that's this kind of journalistic niche. Mm-hmm. And there are a few moments in life, there are occasional moments in people's lives where you just sort of make a kind of clear decision that it's not just the half-conscious moving through life. And I had this moment of realizing that my life was really about the First Amendment, but that I wanted to dedicate it to exercising the First Amendment rather than writing about it,
right.
You know, as commentary. And I've ended up, obviously, you know, doing both. But so I have the continuity, I think, for me is I have a sense of sort of vocation under the First Amendment, you know. And I think
in theory,
all journalists should. But I think in practice, you know, especially at this difficult time in journalism, it's, you know, though that tradition is not in great shape.
Let me ask you this, Jamie, as we wrap up in the last minutes here. You know, I always ask guests at the big table about Chicago, about what it means, because you spent your whole life here and you've seen a Chicago that a lot of people listening at WGN Radio haven't.
Right.
Talk about what do you think of how has the city inspired you, and what do you think Chicago is to Jamie Calvin?
Well, you know, it's so funny. You know, so we referred earlier to a lawsuit, the title of which is Calvin versus Chicago. I love the city. I love the city. I'm a native of the city. I live within a couple of blocks of the different places I grew up in. When I walk the dogs, I walk under trees that I learned to ride a bike under, or, you know, waddled under as a little kid. I mean, I have, you know, this incredible sense of place. And my sense of place extends to communities like Stateway Gardens and Robert Taylor. I mean, that was part of my sense of place. But at the same time, you know, this city really bruises you. It really bruises you. And I've come to feel like I'm not sure privilege is the word, but there's something, if you know, the great issues of race and class and how we organize cities are the defining issues in American life, then one of the things about living in Chicago, and it's both, you know, the privilege and the bruising part of it, is in your face all the time. It's
all
accessible,
the time,
and you can engage it. You might live in Montana, you know, and there's still the great issues in American life, but you don't have the ability to engage with them. So for me, that's, you know, meant a great deal. I would add, though, that at this moment, which is a moment of historic possibility, I mean, really extraordinary possibility, for profound and enduring change. We'll have to, you know, sustain it, find the political will, a lot of statesmanship will be required of everybody. But I think a cop said this to me, a really admirable police officer who's a good friend and, in fact, one of the rarest things, a whistleblower within the department. And she said to me recently, we live in a broken city. And I think right now we live in a broken city. And it's on all of us. That the challenge of healing and repairing a broken city isn't just for the mayor and the police superintendent, and it isn't just for the particular communities most affected by this kind of abuse. I think all of us now live in a broken city, and if we care about the city and care about each other, we need to engage that.
Jamie Calvin's a writer and a human rights activist. He's the man behind the Invisible Institute and the Citizens Police Data Project, which just won the Knight News Challenge Grant for $400,000. Jamie, great to see you. Thanks for coming in and being my guest on the Big Table.
Always a pleasure.
Speaking of Blackhawks, they got the Ducks tomorrow. Let's turn around this little losing streak. This no big deal. It's regular season. When they win, we're like, this unbelievable, best team ever. They lose, right? It's a regular season. It doesn't matter. They got a big one tomorrow at the UC against the Anaheim Ducks. So you know what that means. It's time for Know Your Enemy with Judd Surratt.
Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
He is my enemy.
This is Know Your Enemy on 720 WGN. Here's Judd Surratt.
The Anaheim Ducks 3.5-month nightmare looks like it's finally over. Anaheim was pegged by many to win the Stanley Cup before the season began. But the Ducks started the year losing 6 of 7, and it took until New Year's Eve before they finally reached a 500 record. General Manager Bob Murray, the former Blackhawk defenseman, opted to keep affable head coach Bruce Boudreau, who was in the crosshairs during the first half.
Right now, we're not creating enough chances, and we're making it easy on teams. So we got to find and go to difficult areas and work a little harder to get to those areas.
Surprisingly, the Ducks haven't been able to score. Winger Corey Perry's done his part. After a slow start, Perry, who has a nasty streak to his game, is on pace for his sixth 30-goal season. Captain Ryan Getzlaff, however, is a different story.
Vanson takes the hit from Lewis. Kings get a turnover, but only briefly. David Perron coming in with Getzlaff, 2-on-1. Getzlaff scores! Ryan Getzlaff with only his fourth goal of the season. But a big one early in this game, giving the Ducks a 1-0 lead, 11:01 to play in the first period.
Even though he's always been known as a passer, Getzlaff is on pace for 7 goals, by far the worst ever for the 3-time All-Star center and Canadian Olympian. He's not alone. Murray candidly admitted the Ducks, a team that was ousted by the Blackhawks in Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals last season, wasn't ready to start the year, and the Ducks GM may have exacerbated matters, making too many roster changes and upsetting the chemistry. To get back in the playoff race, Anaheim has turned itself into a defensive juggernaut. Incumbent starter Frederik Andersen has been stingy all season long in net, along with Pittsburgh native and second-year pro John Gibson, who picked up a shutout in the NHL All-Star game.
That was fun. I mean, I think coming into it, you're going to give up goals, but it's also a chance to make some nice saves and help the team out, and we're fortunate enough to do that tonight, and it worked out.
Gibson and Andersen get help from a talented blue line. Sammy Vatanen and Hampus Lindholm and Cam Fowler are all adept puck movers. Josh Manson, Clayton Stoner, and newly acquired veteran Kevin Bieksa bring a physical edge on the back end. In addition, 2013 first-round pick Shea Theodore looks like he's ready to become a full-time NHLer this season. With depth on defense and 2 solid goaltenders, look for Anaheim to be active before the February 29th trade deadline. If they can add the right type of skill up front, the Ducks might fulfill the preseason prediction. For Know Your Enemy, I'm Judd Surratt.
Keep your enemies close.
It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Patty Vasquez takes over at 11. I'm very excited for our new segment here on the download. One of the best live-lit stage shows in Chicago is called Right Club. We had Ian Belknap and Lindsay Moscato on the show last month. The show, which pits two writers against each other, arguing lofty thoughts like here versus there, Or how about might versus right? Or zombies versus vampires, which I think is probably the best one. They put two writers on stage and they write it out. This idea has been exported to different cities like Atlanta, San Francisco, Los Angeles. And you know, we got to talking about what would stop us from exporting it to a different medium. From the stage to the radio. That's
do we have to pronounce it radio?
It's just a pretentious way to say radio. I'm trying to be artistic.
I'm all in, man.
Ian Belknap and Lindsay Moscato are back tonight with two writers who will write to the death. And we, Download Nation, we are the judge. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Ian and Lindsay, welcome back.
Hi.
See you guys. We kind of, you know, like after we talked, we did New Year's resolutions about a month ago. We said, you know what? How hard would it be to get Write Club on the radio? And the answer is not that hard. A month. It took about a month.
We just had to get some writers and drag them in here.
So let's talk about it. So, did I sum it up correctly? For the elevator pitch for Write Club to the WGN.
One thing that a common misapprehension about Write Club is that you're going to a show where you'll see people writing. And that's not what it is.
That would be boring.
They would have written their piece in advance.
I see.
They will read it to you then.
Right.
Then you make the call on
the... I thought it was like 3 minutes of just people furiously writing.
No.
And whoever finishes first with the best penmanship...
No.
Gets
nope.
We've spared you that.
Okay, yeah. Good. So it's you're right.
So the material is prepared in advance.
It is prepared in advance, and they read it to the audience.
That's right.
And then the audience will pick the winner.
That's
like
right.
If it was Right versus Might, one writer will take on Right, the other will take on Might.
That's correct.
Okay, so what's the difference between what we would see on stage show? If you saw Right Club at the Hideout at some point, what's the difference in what we're going to get from Right Club
radio?
Well,
if you come to the live show... You get the sexy picture of a writer, which, come on.
Great. Yeah,
for everyone listening, that's like, oh, yeah.
You probably also have a drink in your hand, but you can do that at home.
Okay,
right.
So pretty much all the stuff on the peripheral, the game is still the same.
The game is the same, except we have shortened our time limit. In the live show, you have 7 minutes. Which on the radio we kind of concluded would be an eternity. So we've cut it down to 4.
You're getting into Garrison Keillor territory.
That's
at 7 minutes.
Exactly right.
We've given these jokers 4 minutes.
Exactly. Okay, 4 minutes.
Four.
Right. And so the guests that we will bring to you are going to be some of the favorite friends that we have from the live show.
Okay.
Starting next month. Today.
No.
We're right here. No. Oh, sorry. No, but so some of our greatest allies, some of our greatest champions are going to be battling it out for you and your listeners.
All right. Let's talk about the premiere episode. That's tonight, coming up. We'll take a quick break and then we'll get to it. But tell us who's going to be performing and what is the topic?
Yep. Our topics?
Rise versus fall.
That's right.
Rise versus fall. So one writer will take on Rise, the other will take on Fall.
That's right.
Okay.
So, and just so your listeners know, we don't require anything of our writers. We just give them that one word prompt, and then they do whatever they will with it.
All right.
It could be a personal essay. It could be a personal narrative. It could be fiction. It could be, God help us, poetry. it's not poetry, right, guys?
No.
Good.
No.
Okay.
No. No.
So listeners, stay tuned. No poetry.
No.
And our only requirement is that they stick to their time limit.
All right.
Okay?
All right.
And they are competing for the loving cup of deathless in the live show.
Oh, good.
It's a word we cannot say, glory.
But you have a trophy here. Good, because I was worried. We had nothing to give them.
That's right.
For comparison, tell them about how tall that trophy is.
It's so if you went to Starbucks and ordered a tall coffee... Mm-hmm. That would be about an inch and a half taller than this.
Okay, great. That's perfect.
But since it's deathless glory, it doesn't need to be large.
No, it's not.
Right?
It's not
it doesn't
about
need
size.
To be ostentatious.
It's about the heart.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly so.
Ian Belknap, Lindsay Moscato, the people behind Write Club, which is the last Tuesday of every month.
Third Tuesday of every month
at the Hideout, which is coming up.
So it's this coming Tuesday.
We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to hear from Josh and Corbett.
Yep.
Those are the two writers taking on Rise and Fall.
Yep.
And 312-981-7200 is the number. We want calls and we want texts. And really, you're going to vote for one or the other.
That's right.
That's the idea. All right, yeah. Stay with
there
us.
There are no ties.
No ties on Right Club Radio. Beats by Zim, giving us a little fight music. Reminds me of like growing up in the right outside the Zaire parking lot.
Zaire.
That kind of vibe. It's the kind of music you would play before
we'd like
a
to make Zaire your store.
Yeah, yeah, a Zaire parking lot fight. All right, Ian Belknap, we are here. It's Right Club Radio. We are having our first inaugural Right Club Radio here on the Download. The Right Club is always at the Hideout third Tuesday of every month, where it pits two writers against each other with one lofty idea. Ian, what's the idea again?
We have Rise versus Fall this evening, and our inaugural readers are going to be Corbett Pasco and Josh Zagorin.
Okay.
And tell the people who has what subject.
I'm Corbett Pasco, and I have Fall.
I'm Josh Zagorin, and I have Rise.
Okay.
All right, so 312-981-7200. So when they both read and we're done, you're going to be the judge at home. 312-981-7200. I want a nice mix of text to say yes for Rise, yet no. And I also want people to call in and give us more of the show your math kind of why.
Right. And they're both quite tough, so if you want to really lay into them,
you can.
It's totally fine.
I also want yes for Rise, just to put that out there. Would love that. That'd be awesome. Thank
you. Don't give him what he wants.
All right.
It's not
your words,
sir.
So, as we do in the live show, we have to determine our order of combatants, which is, of course, by rock, paper, scissors.
Ooh, rock, paper, scissors.
It's the only way to decide anything.
So the protocol, as you will recall, as battle-tested veterans, is 1, 2, 3, blam. Okay? Are you ready?
Yes.
Ready.
Here we go. 1, 2, 3, blam.
Oh!
Snip.
Meow.
That is Josh Zagorin with scissors beating Corbett Pasco's paper.
Does he get to choose if he defers?
He gets to choose whether he wishes to go first or second.
What do you think, Josh?
I'm going to go second.
Of course you are.
This is like the Super Bowl.
It's just like the Super Bowl.
It is.
It is.
It's
just as expensive.
Right.
Too.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so. And so advertisements will cost $88 million a minute.
Yep.
All right.
Corbett Pasco, you will be going first.
I will.
Are you ready?
I am.
Okay. We have 4 minutes on the clock.
There's the clock.
Here we go. Oh, God.
Wait, what?
That's agony.
I'm glad everybody else heard that.
We want to play that all the way through the rest of the show.
Oh.
All right.
All right, we go.
Corbett Pasco in 3, 2, 1, begin.
Martin Shkreli smooths his hair in the mirror. I would say he straightens his tie, but he doesn't wear one of those because he finds them a needless accessory, like collar stays or human decency. You'll recall that this human crash of a water truck and vinegar truck raised the price of Daraprim by 5,000%, restricting its access to vulnerable people like pregnant women and AIDS patients who need it to fight parasitic infection. So, this smirktacular dirtbag checks his extremely punchable face in the mirror before he heads to give his testimony before the House Committee on Oversight. He wants to make sure his condescending look perfectly articulates the message of, "This is your fault, politicians, and I am rich." It does. He is satisfied. Before leaving to do nothing but sit at a hearing and look like a PETA member at a barbecue, he drafts his tweet to Kanye West, offering to buy his forthcoming album outright for $10 million. He makes sure Yeezy knows he's serious about this offer and that he is required to take it to the board of directors before releasing the album to the public. The testimony is a smashing success, and his assortment of smug expressions are instant gifts and memes used by people worldwide who run to greet their friends and lovers in the most hideous way possible. He opens the door to the stairwell, wanting to avoid the paparazzi and other humans wanting answers for his seemingly cartoon villainy. Humans. A disgusting lot, he thinks. He checks his phone to see if Yeezus has returned his Twitter offer yet. In doing so, he misses the first step of the concrete stairs. Shkreli falls. Spectacularly. He tumbles down the entire flight of stairs face first in a glorious header that will be played in endless loops on YouTube, ideally in slow motion. The staircase seems to expand each time his flesh smacks against the cold step to the sound of crunching cheekbones. The rise of the stairs, not as smooth as the step, tears his face open with each tumble, drawing fresh blood and leaving bits of grainy concrete in his flesh. His fall is epic, and it is long, and it renders him unable to walk for several months. He breaks all of his orbital bones, so both of his eyeballs sink into his cheeks, which are really just exposed muscle now. And there is a little skin left surrounding the smirk that once bestowed its horrid greenish light unto the world. It is now a sunken and toothless maw. He is unrecognizable. He is broken and glistening with blood and tears. It is hours before anyone comes to help him. The wounds leave his body extremely vulnerable to parasitic infection. The hospital he is taken to does not have access to Daraprim and cannot administer it to him in a timely manner. He must wait. Yes, I could go on about how one never rises into love because a state so gracious as love has to knock you down a peg or seven, and that's as it should be. I could talk about how fall is always the necessary predecessor to rise, or there would be no sobriety or recovery or reform, and we would live with our own demons on this earth forever. I could mention that if you hear, "I've fallen," in a public place, you have the urge to help, and if you hear, "I have risen," in a public place, you have the urge to run because it's either the crazy preacher dude outside of Old Navy, or it's actually the devil and you should leave. I could talk about the glorious season of fall, or how falling to one's knees in prayer or ecstasy as a gift, but Zagorin is over there trying to Dumbledore his way into being like a phoenix or something, and it's just freaking me out. So just picture that. Martin Shkreli, human experiment gone wrong, falling headfirst down a flight of ever-expanding stairs, the surface of which is covered with rusty saw blades and syphilis forever. Or picture Roosh V, the leader of the Return of the Kings movement and pickup artist who believes that rape should be legal on private property, falling into a bottomless pit of diseased dog mouth and lemon juice for all eternity. That fall is enough to make the entire concept worth celebrating. It's enough to make you fall in love with it.
Woo! There you go. That was All right.
That was pretty definitive.
All right. That was great. Corbett Pascoe with fall.
As falls go.
I mean, yeah.
Everybody, I want, if you take nothing from tonight, GN listeners, saw blades and syphilis.
Just saw blades and syphilis. All right. All right. So let's keep going. Let's keep going so we can listen before the news.
So.
All right. Right Club Radio.
Retain every aspect of what you just heard and clear your mind entirely. Do so now.
All right.
Josh Zagorin, are you ready?
I am.
Can we have 4 minutes on the clock, please?
4 minutes,
yeah. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
Say there, are you tired of being low? The world got you down? You say you're paying less and you're on the ground floor, but you got ants? Well, step right up, sad pants, and see the greatest concept in the history of human direction. It's better than forward. It's better than backward. It's better than left. And so right, it's right. No longer will you lay down, keep it down, and hold down the fort. No! You'll be up and at 'em, up, up, and away. Look up in the air with the birds, planes, and Superman. They're there. They're right up there. Don't you want to hang out with them? They're great. And there's no ants in the sky. But how, you ask, does one in fact get up there? Jumping? That's for children. Flying? Who told you you could fly? They're lying to you. The only way up is slow, simple, and majestic. And people, it's okay to be majestic. Just ask Cher. All you gotta do is to do it is rise. Stop looking down on yourself and get that chin ascending. You're worth it, and it's better for you. Just ask Doe. What's Doe do? It lays there. And if you let it lay there, it'll stay dumb and doughy until it's hard and useless. But get it rising, and soon it'll be delicious. Biscuits, muffins, cookies. You too can be a sweet, delicious treat because you're better than Doe. You're the bread, baby! Now, some people are going to tell you that it's better to fall. Fail gloriously, they'll say. Because how else can we pick ourselves back up if we don't fall down? How can we succeed if we don't fail? Fall, fail. We're all human, and success isn't everything. But then what are stairs for? Why, we invented stairs! Who would make stairs when it was really just okay to fall down? Have you ever taken the stairs? It's hard. Falling, it's easy. Anyone can do it anywhere. Just point yourself down and move. But rising? That takes progress, distension, aggrandizing, and breakthroughs. Falling's for babies. You see them do it all the time. It's like they love it. Babies take an eternity to figure out how to take steps. And when they do, they give up on falling forever, because stepping is the only way to rise. Why, we like rising so much, we even made stepping up easier. We have escalators now. Rising stairs. And even when one of those escalators break down, they're still stairs. So you're still going to get where you're going. So don't let them tell you it's better to fall and get back up, because getting up is where you were going in the first place. Why waste time? Stay risen. Keep rising. And someday, you might even get to the top. And that's where it's at, baby. It's the summit, the peak, the pinnacle, the acme, zenith, and prime. And don't those all sound like fabulous places to be? Falling just gets you down, but rising gets you high. Why keep falling until you hit rock bottom when you could be rising and shining? Cream rises to the top. Balloons rise over a party. And when is the last time you congratulated somebody on falling to the occasion? Never. That's when. What if Jesse Jackson asked us to never give up, never surrender, and fall against the odds? What if Gandhi said, we may stumble and fall, but shall fall again? Did Maya Angelou fall after being written down in history with bitter lines and trod in the very dirt? Are we to be healthy, wealthy, and wise by early falling? Everyone knows you gotta get up to get down. And how else are you gonna drop truth bombs if you don't rise above the lies? So step right up, Satty McGee. Get the corners of your mouth in a northerly direction, move up, saddle up, and pony up, because you need to get a rise out of you, or else you'll just fall asleep forever.
Woo!
All right.
There you go. How about that?
So we leave it to
Josh Segoran. That was great. All right. So let's. So we heard from Josh. We heard from Corbett. Rise and fall. 312-981-7200. Text us right now or call in 312-981-7200. Which do you like better, rise versus fall?
Yeah, let's also remind people.
Hold on one second here.
Is who? So say your. Why don't you guys say your topics again?
Yes. Okay. Corbett Pasco, fall.
This is Josh Segoran for Rise.
There you go. 312-981-7200. Let's take a break. We'll come back after the news and we will start to tally. Does that sound good? Rise and fall, Right Club Radio. Come on, it's great. It is a download here on WGN Radio. I am Justin Kaufman, and tonight we are launching.
We're on the launch pad right now.
Right Club Radio is what we're doing here Friday night, 9 o'clock. It's our inaugural voyage.
Gadlin.
Steve Gadlin has dropped his...
Gadlin just dropped everything.
Everything.
He's getting ready for...
He lost his shoe right off the bat, too. Didn't even have 10 seconds.
He's excited. He's excited because he's excited. Up front at 10 o'clock.
Probably didn't have a pocket full of marbles.
So,
why did I bring all these marbles? 312-981-7200.
We've got a lot of texts. I'm going to read through them here. But it was Rise and Fall, and tonight we heard from Josh Segoran, who did Rise, and Corbett Pasco, who did Fall. We heard them right before the break, and now we're asking you to be the judge. Let's go to the phones, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Kathy. Kathy, welcome to the show. You are our first caller on Right Club Radio, so congratulations to that.
Well played, Kathy.
Thank you. Truly honored. Yeah. I'm voting for Fall because I like the way she structured the character so that the things that made him haughty and superior – after he fell down the steps, it couldn't help him. So I like the irony that she worked into that. I also like the way she read it.
That's great. Kathy? I'm going to keep you on
hold. That's a thoughtful critique.
See what Kathy really wants off the prize sheet, because that was kind of the best thing we could ever ask for Right Club Radio.
Yeah, a prize sheet?
There's really a prize sheet.
I was not told of a prize sheet.
I was not told of a prize sheet.
Yeah, I was debating whether or not to give you guys prizes for reading on the show, but then I was like,
we're gladiators.
The prize is the glory.
He's like, the prize is glory. They're here anyway.
And the hug that I'm going to give Kathy.
That's right. So, Kathy, thank you for that. 312-981-7200. Let's go to some of the texts. Okay, so 708 says, if I rise, I become one of the 1%. If I rise, become one of the 1%, then, or do I want me to fall? All right.
They're not wrong.
They're not.
That's not a vote, though, I would say.
It's more of a contemplative question for
that,
a future
it had,
time.
It had a look of a sentence, and then I made the mistake of diving into that sentence.
I see.
All right, let's go keep going. 872 says rise. I liked rise. There you go.
There you have one word answer.
224 says rise, wins hands up. because it can't be hands down. Sorry, Fall.
Are we getting what they did there?
Yes.
I got it.
Sorry, Fall. You didn't cut the mustard this time, but happy Valentine's Day to everybody.
Dang.
Oh, well, you know, I mean.
So that's nice.
What is season's greeting? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
You didn't make it, but have a great day. Yeah.
Hopefully someone loves you.
773 says, Fall. Corbett put such lovely pictures into my head. Saw blades and syphilis.
Oh, yeah. Nice. I'm telling you, it's also my next band.
Right.
Happy Valentine's Day indeed.
That's right.
8110 says, texting from Texas. Ooh. Fall.
Awesome.
All the way from Texas.
Texas forever. Thank you.
847 says, rise up and cheer the fall.
Oh, that's so mean.
And that's what it said. The fall wins hands down. And says, by the way, escalators and stairs don't always go up. That's from Sue. So.
Oh.
Yeah, you know what, Sue?
Thank you.
I don't know that.
Thank you, Sue.
Just dial it back a little bit, all right?
Sue is a regular listener.
It was an extended metaphor.
I think Sue
you know, to be fair, though,
clear on the fact
in Sue's
that
defense,
an escalator can go either way.
In Sue's defense, she's not wrong.
She's not. And what if Josh actually didn't do his research and he didn't know that?
That's right, see?
And I learned something
she learned
today,
something.
So thank you.
I vetted you more carefully.
706 says, Corbett rocked Fall. Harder than The Clash rocked the Casbah.
Whoa.
That is a bold claim.
That
is a bold claim.
So it started.
Also the worst one of their songs.
770 says Rise. So Rise is in. But then 269 says Fall.
Oh,
so we're getting close here. 847 says Josh.
Hey, how are you? Oh, that's it.
That's his dad.
Oh, it's totally my thanks, Dad.
They were just trying to get your attention.
630 says Rise was riveting, but I fell for Fall.
Oh, I like that.
I like that.
661, Rise.
There's a couple of switcheroo votes.
Yeah. I get a lot of one-word answers.
Yeah, you're a one-word kind of guy.
I'm a one-word guy.
773 says Fall, powerfully fierce.
Oh, I'm getting that on a T-shirt.
Agree. Yep, yeah. I agree with that. Hashtag.
773 says Fall. Swear word Fall.
Didn't actually write out swear word. It was an actual swear word.
Okay. Was it a bunch of symbols?
Saw blade. No, it was not symbols. No.
All right.
219. Saw blades and syphilis, dog, mouse, and lemon juice. Oh, yeah. Fall it is.
Mm-hmm.
224 says Fall. The visceral descriptions convey a satisfying vision of karma served with a side of concrete. Yes.
Well, you know, that's pretty
what
delicious.
About.
These are really the best reviews I've ever had in my life.
Isn't it great? When you guys do the show at the Hideout, all you get is a full audience clapping one way or the other.
Right.
You don't get the specific. That's where this could be. Yeah. An extension or a nice addition to the Right Club style.
So far, Zagorin, it seems like you're getting like live show people.
Right.
Who are just basically hollering.
Just screaming. Right. Which is what I do.
And Corbett is getting people
thoughtful
who are thinking for a minute.
Who are drinking tea and actually thinking about what they're saying.
That's and right. have unlimited texting.
That's right.
Exactly. 847 says Fall, Corvette rocks. So she got the name wrong. But,
that's all right.
But they like cars.
I also agree
so
that Corvettes rock as well.
Corvettes do rock.
773 does the one word Fall. So there you go.
All right.
So.
Awesome. See, there's a holler. Holler.
That's a word, right? I would argue that Corvette rocks is not a vote. I'm just putting that out there.
Okay, well, we'll take it off. We'll take it. 847.
That was just an observation.
No.
847 says Falling has a better speaking voice, but both messages were lame.
Love the honesty.
You know,
you sounded real nice
that's
while you wasted my time.
All right, here's a good one. 312 says Corbett won. She wrote more words, or at least read more per minute.
Right.
About a broad range of topics. Josh was good, but I felt like it was a motivational speaker/presidential candidate.
Not wrong.
Not wrong.
Just to clarify out there,
for Josh for president.
It's not based on word count.
It's not. Okay?
But if it was a contest of how many words you can cram into a minute.
I'm impressed.
Thank you. And that's a lot coming from you. But yeah, I usually win that contest.
All right. And then, okay. I vote for Fall. I would have liked to have seen if. More innuendo for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Yeah, huh. I think that's just. I think that's an overall note to Right Club Radio. Yeah. I think they wanted more innuendo, guys.
Oh, some more holiday appropriate.
Put it in our notes.
Yeah. So, all right. So I have tallied.
Okay.
And we have. I'm a little bit off on the votes, but I don't think it matters at this point.
Oh no.
I'm not really counting.
Yeah,
but
it's not close. The winner of our first Right Club Radio is Corbett Pasco for
Fall.
Go, Corvette.
Thank you.
Overwhelming.
You
Josh,
and
you did well.
The loving cup of deathless glory.
Swear word glory.
Goes to Corvette Pass.
That is delightful.
I want to thank everybody who played tonight and called in. And what I really want to say is that this was a success. The shows are on the third Tuesday of every month. You can see it in its original intent, which is live in front of an audience at the Hideout every third Tuesday of the month up at the Hideout on 1354 West Wabansia. But I think Right Club Radio was, I liked it. Do you guys like it?
Yeah, this is awesome.
I would listen to this.
I would.
I would text in.
I would totally text in.
If for no other reason to actually hear those specific feedback comments.
Absolutely. I'm just going to text in one word answers, though.
I think
I would actually drive to Texas.
Steak.
Text in Josh.
Right.
Even if I'm not on the show.
Except that Texas actually voted for me.
She voted. Yeah.
But that's okay. You know, but that's fine.
I do think that we've figured out a new wrinkle in Right Club where you can get very specific and really hear from your audience as opposed to just sort of group thought. So that's good.
Right.
All right. Corbett Pasco, Josh Zagorin, Lindsay Moscato, Ian Belknap, good to see you. And we will see Ian and Lindsay and two new writers next month. You're on Right Club Radio.
See you.
Thanks.
Oh, that song. Are we on our way to greener pastures with the Chicago Bears? Maybe, but today's news that we are going to be without running back Matt Forte, who the Bears are not going to re-sign, stings a little bit. I mean, I think we get it, right? We get it as Bears fans that he's a free agent. He costs a lot of money. But at the same time, Matt Forte was not the problem. He hasn't been for 8 seasons in Chicago, being one of the more productive backs in the NFL. Sam Pinjanovic, WGN Sports, joins us now. Sam, good to talk to you. Surprise? Probably not.
No, this is something that I thought was coming from, you know, a mile away. You could see the train coming into the tracks really slowly, and that's not a joke on Matt Forte's age or the workload that he's had. It's just dollars and cents. And Ryan Pace, the Bears general manager, wants to be a little bit more frugal with his money. He'd like to spend it in other places. He likes Jeremy Langford, maybe Kadeem Carey. Maybe they draft the running back. But, you know, Matt Forte asked for an extension, and usually you don't give it to guys 30 or older. That's just really what it came down to. Forte can pick wherever he wants to go now. And I'm telling you right now, I almost promise you that Bill Belichick made contact today. Mm. Hey, Matt, would you like to come play in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, right.
I mean, these are decisions he can make now, because career salary game for Matt Forte, it's about $35 million. He's been paid, the family's well fed, and now he gets to go where he wants.
You know, and he's the kind of back that I think would work in a system like that, because, you know, he catches the ball out of the backfield. I mean, that is his strength. I mean, he's been a great between the tackle runner, but man, he set records in the NFL catching the football.
He's actually the most, he's got the most yards from scrimmage in the NFL since he came into the league. He's got 8,600 rushing yards and 4,000 receiving
yards.
Wow,
unbelievable.
That's the most by any player. And it might make some Bears fans sick, but the two places I think he fits best are New England with Tom Brady and Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. Those quarterbacks would find a way to utilize him. He would be so good in those schemes. And, you know, just imagine watching a close game week 15 next year, Bears and Packers, and Matt Forte is the one killing you.
Don't say that, man. That's terrible. That's a terrible thought.
You want me to go? I can leave if you want.
No, one thing about Matt Forte is that he is over 30 and everyone is expecting a decline, but, you know, we didn't really see it. And a lot of that has to do with his work ethic and the way he has been, you know, you could see it on Instagram and everything, training. He's had such a great couple of years of keeping himself in shape that he really has defied that over 30 hump.
Absolutely. I would have tried to figure something out. I think Forte could have still given you a good 2 years of football. We talk about consistency. We talk about the yards, both receiving and rushing. But, I mean, he was a guy in his 8 seasons. He played all 16 games 5 times. Had a game, had a season where he played 15 games in 2012. He was rarely hurt. And the fewest games he ever played was 12 in 2011. So he was always on the field. He was always ready to go. And you can count on him in more ways than one. He was a great blocker, too. That's the other thing that people don't realize. You know, you look at all the yards, but he was a great blocker. And Jay Cutler got his clock clean quite a bit, but it wasn't for Forte. It would have been a lot more the last 8 years.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, what do the Bears, what do you think? I mean, you know, I kind of made a joke at the top. I mean, we better see this money being spent, right? I mean, this is, do you see Ryan Pace going out and replacing Matt Forte's salary with an all-pro defensive lineman? Or what? I mean, because he's a running back. I mean, he get paid well.
I think he's going to show up a lot on that defense. You know, you have to pay for some linebackers. Danny Trevathan, who's a middle linebacker for Denver, just won a Super Bowl. I don't think the Broncos can afford all of those guys. They've got Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware. Trevathan could be available. I think he's going to more or less build the offensive line, build that linebacking core, draft a couple guys maybe up front in the trenches. But I'm going to give Ryan Pace the benefit of the doubt. You'll miss Matt Forte this year, but you won't miss him in 3 or 4 years. So this is more long-term than it is anything else. Give some guys some reps, chances to grow.
All right. Well, let's talk about quickly about the Chicago Bulls. They're limping into the All-Star break.
Do we have to?
I know. Jeez, you and I are going to talk. Yeah, we'll talk bigger picture next week, just sort of giving a mid-season. But today, you know, Chicago Tribune columnist David Haw talked a little bit about the issue we've talked about, which is management accountability. This is going south real quick.
It has been, too. And you and I joked about this when the Bulls fired Tom Thibodeau last spring. Does this make the team better? And I said, I don't think it does. He just fired a top-5 head coach who went to the playoffs in all 5 seasons in Chicago and got the most out of a ragtag roster. This is the same story as far as on the court. The problem is I don't think the players respect the coach at all. I don't think that they think that he knows what he's doing. He came in right away and, you know, kind of – you know, pulled the rope back a little bit, which is what they needed. But at some point, the best players need to be coached, and they are not coached very hands-on. Jimmy Butler called his coach out famously, you know, like 20 games into his first season, mm-hmm. and said that he needs to coach him harder. So I'm not sure he has the locker room. And, you know, the more telling story is look at the roster this regime between John Paxson and Gar Foreman has put together. You got a really slow team that doesn't defend at all. They love to shoot, but they don't love to play on the other end. Your point yeah. guard's been hurt. Jimmy Butler's now hurt. Joakim Noah's out for the season. So it's inconsistency, it's injuries, and I think it's poor roster shaping, to be honest.
But is it possible? Is it just possible the Bulls are just getting some bad luck? I mean, with the injuries to the first day to Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler going on, Joakim Noah, huge part he's out for the year.
Well, that's part of it, too. But, I mean, they still won 50 games last year. And you had guys like Etuan Moore starting, and you had to rely on a lot of younger players. Yeah. Mirotić was really big for them in March last year. So, you know, you can't play the injury excuse if you're management because you put this team together and you've known for years that this team is going to find a way to get hurt. I mean, Pau Gasol's 36, and there was a report the other day that they might extend him. It's like, what are you doing? He's going to get hurt. You right. know it's going to happen. So both sides of the blame, I think coaching – I think, you know, managerial positions, but also the players. I mean, they're losing to garbage teams. They are 27-25. They haven't been that bad since Vinny Del Negro was here.
Oh, no. Oh, oh. How dare you mention that name.
They're barely in the playoffs.
I know. It's crazy,
man.
They're
7th in the East.
It's absolutely crazy. I, you know, thinking about this team, one of the things you talked about, which I totally see, when you talk about coaching up, you're seeing some of the second and third and fourth year players. And I'm thinking about Tony Snell. I'm thinking about Mirotić. I'm thinking about Doug McDermott, who seem to be regressing in this system where the thought was they were going to take advantage of it.
I'm looking at my television right now. It's the Rising Stars Challenge. It's the USA against the world. And it's a collaboration of players that are either rookies or second-year players. And I noticed two things. Damn, those guys can fly. And two, none of them are Bulls. So, I mean, you get the young players in the league, you know, Butler's in his fifth year now, so he's not really that young anymore. But that gaggle of players, Mirotić, McDermott, Portis, Bairstow, okay, maybe you got a couple bench guys there, but you don't have surefire guys that are going to play starting minutes a long time. So, I don't know. This roster's getting older, but at the same time, the young players aren't helping. So, it's a mess.
All right, Sam, you got to come in next week. We'll talk about midseason grades, talk about the Chicago Bulls and what they might or might not do at the trade deadline. Sam Penjanovic, WGN Sports, good to talk to you, buddy.
I'll bring my T-shirt cannon.
Coming up, the frying pan. Are you excited, Rob?
No, I don't like it already.
It's already an A.
I don't even know what it is. Sorry, Steve. I love Steve.
He will. You know what? That's motivation for him. That's motivation.
Kind of.
No, I always each week I look forward to what he has to offer.
Right. As we all do. As we all do. Oh, there's a wicked young man cooking slowly in a frying pan. Ooh, a new one. I love it. A new song. Beats by Zim. WGN, it's a download. I'm Justin Kaufman, and it's time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Steve Gadlin is the brain behind a successful local business. I want to draw a cat for you. He presented his business idea on the television show Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Mark Cuban with new ideas. Before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. He's giving us his exclusive business idea tonight so we can poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence to pitch it to Mark Cuban. As always, 312-981-7200. You know what? This has become a Friday tradition. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you.
It's good to see you, and it's good to always hear Rob Martier.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so let me ask you, you know, last week you left pretty dejected off of the crab cake.
That's right. I couldn't even remember what I had pitched last week. It's that far out of my head.
That's
I'll
right.
I'll tell you that.
But it felt like for the first time ever you had some initial momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Like we got a lot of yays at the top, which was exciting, and we felt the energy build, and then the house just kind of came tumbling down.
That was exciting.
Right. So this week, are you feeling? You feel good? What
well,
do you feel? It's cold
this
out.
Time, right. You know what? I'll tell you. This time, the callers' opinions don't even matter because the idea I'm pitching is so altruistic and so necessary and solves such a huge problem in society that I know, regardless of how it's received, you know, I will fall on the sword and be the guy that brings it to the people because I love my fellow man.
Wow, it's going to be hard to argue with that. Yep. It sounds like Steve's very confident. 312-981-7200. Well, let's get to it, Steve. Steve Gadlin, what is this week's idea for the frying pan?
Well, if there's one problem that I despise, it's the problem of gun safety. Okay? That's a problem all around society right now, and you hear politicians.
Gun safety.
Well, guns.
Yeah.
Lack of gun safety. You hear politicians talking about it all the time, so you know it's big, and it's in the news a lot too. And the big problem is people are so against regulation of guns because of the Constitution.
Right.
So what I want to do is introduce technology that solves the problem instead of lawmaking. Instead of policy, we introduce technology that fixes it.
I like that idea. Okay. Yeah. What is it?
Well, the product is called the Gun Shy. Now, it's something that attaches to your gun. And what it does is it makes you think twice before firing one of those lethal bullets. When you pull the trigger, the gun, this is using speech technology, will say, "Are you sure?" And then it waits for your verbal response, yes or no, before it fires the shot. What that does is it gives the wielder of the weapon a second thought, a time to think, is this really appropriate or can non-lethal force solve my problem? Or if a kid has stumbled upon a weapon that they shouldn't have their hands on, it warns them, this is live and loaded. Are you sure?
It's almost like a computer, you know, when you go to a website or want to click a link and it says, are you sure you want to do this? You know, it essentially is double checking.
Similar, but with voice technology. So just like your phone, when you can ask it a question, when the weapon says, are you sure, it waits to hear yes or no very clearly before it performs or doesn't perform the function.
Well, I have questions.
Sure.
But again, as I always say, I'd like to hear more from Download Nation than myself. I'm just the moderator. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The idea, the gun shy.
Yeah.
Again, one quick elevator pitch.
Well, it's a device that goes onto your weapon so that if your weapon is fired, it asks you in a loud voice, are you sure? And you need to respond yes or no. And if you respond yes, then the weapon will discharge. If you respond no, you know, it gives you that moment to pause to, you know, where you say someone's trigger happy. Well, this now, even if they're trigger happy, they're going to be forced to make a verbal decision and take a second and think about whether or not they really need to discharge that firearm.
Very, I would say, very somber, but also very heady. And like you said, very altruistic.
And I'll say this is, I know this is a controversial topic. And because of that, I'm taking this very seriously tonight.
312-981-7200. Do we like it? The Gun Shy. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, more with Steve Gadlin in the frying pan. Cooking slowly in the frying pan. Nice find for Pete Zimmerman. It's the Download here. The Frying Pan every Friday night at 10 o'clock. Steve Gadlin, local entrepreneur. He's the man behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He is currently under a development deal with Mark Cuban. Before he brings his ideas to Mark, he brings them here to Download. 312-981-7200. Yay or nay on the gun shy.
The gun shy, right. Which is a device that you plug onto your gun. You purchase separately from your firearm. And what it does is when you pull that trigger, the gun, through a speaker in a very loud and clear voice, will say, are you sure? Which gives you a moment to really think if you do want to discharge your weapon or not, which is a very serious decision and not something to be done on impulse. So it waits to hear through voice recognition, the wielder of the weapon either says yes or no to issue the command of the weapon and allow it to discharge or have it disable itself.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go to the lines, 312-981-7200. We got a full fleet. Syed, you're up first. Yay or nay on the gun shy?
Definitely a nay, because the question would be, what would happen in case of a real emergency? Say you have a burglar, you're walking on a wild animal coming after you or something. All right, Mr. Burglar, hang on. Let me make sure the gun is ready. You know, that's yeah. not going to cut it.
All right, thanks, I'd appreciate that. That's a good point. So a nay saying, you know what? What if it's a wild animal?
Look, you know, first of all, he's adding a step. You don't have to say, hold on, Mr. Burglar, wait and let me see if my gun is ready. You pull the trigger and the gun will instantly say, are you sure? To which you can respond, yes or no. So it's not as big a delay as he is thinking. I'd say if a wild animal, first of all, the wild animal's not waiting at the door for you, right? Probably it hears you jingle your keys and open the door and then starts making a run at you. You have probably a few seconds
right.
if you're holding your firearm in ready position to still protect yourself.
Okay, let's go to Bill. Bill, yay or nay on the gun shy?
You know, I got to say nay just based on the technology. Mm-hmm. I can't get my phone to recognize my name to make a phone call most of the time right. and to have to rely on that. Kind of scares me.
Well, Bill, yeah. that's the great Thanks, thing Bill. About it, though, is it will not discharge unless it clearly hears. So, you know, if there's background noise, if someone has music playing, it won't do anything until it hears an accurate yes, a clear and accurate yes. So you cannot accidentally discharge the firearm. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's not recognizing your speech, if you're slurring, maybe you're drunk, or you have an accent.
That you shouldn't have the gun if you're drunk anyway.
Exactly. Right? So if it doesn't recognize that clear English-American yes, then it won't. It just won't fire.
All right, let's keep going. Karen, yay or nay to the gun shy?
Did you say Karen?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Hi, Karen.
Oh, okay. This is me, and I think it's a bad idea. Mm. I think that people who want to use a gun are after power, and they want to use this mechanical object to enforce their will. And if this mechanical object challenged them, talked back to them, I think that would infuriate them even more.
No, so you think they're always going to be like, are you sure? Yes.
Yes, yeah. I do think that.
Okay.
Well, Karen, don't you think
Thanks,
maybe
Karen.
It will give them pause, though? Because what this does is if they are, you know, power hungry and infuriated, the gun makes them stop, assess the situation, and really think about it. You know, you almost have to take a deep breath so that you can answer clearly, and maybe that clears their mind and takes away some of that aggression. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think.
I mean, that's the intention is to. I mean, the words are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go to Joy. Joy, yay or nay on the gun shy?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Kind of like, I think it's a yay.
Yeah.
As Karen just said, though, you know, anybody using one of these mechanical weapons is probably just crazy and power hungry, and that's the only reason for using a gun. However, really, I don't think so. But I think it does give people pause. I think if a kid gets a hold of it and it says, what is the phrase you said? The gun would say,
are you sure?
Okay, so if a gun says, are you sure? And a kid's holding it, they're not going to say yes or no. They're going to say what? And
right.
it's going to not work.
Lock it up,
or
right.
somebody could commit suicide or thinking of it, and they go to pull the trigger and it says, are you sure? Maybe they won't. One thing
yeah.
I think Mark Cuban would ask, I don't know if you already covered this, is say in an emergency situation where somebody's going to use it to protect or defend themselves or somebody else or a police officer or whoever, the first time you pull the trigger, it's going to ask you that you say yes very clearly because you've trained with your gun. So, you know, in an emergency, you say yes. So you're going to shoot. If you need a second bullet, is it going to ask each time?
Oh, that's a great question.
That's
a great question. Let me check. Thanks a lot for that, Joy. That was very thoughtful.
Yeah, that's a setting you would establish when you install it. You know, some people may want it to check every time. Some people every other time. You know, some people just the first time, not again.
Sure.
Some people just the third time. It's based on the setting that you put on it when you install it on the firearm.
All right. Well, that was really thoughtful. I mean, there was a lot of things there with Joy.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joy, for that. Let's go to Gary. Gary, yay or nay on the gun shy?
I'll say yay.
All right.
And the reason I do is because what I thought was if on the spur of the moment, someone who's in desperation and sitting by themselves in their home decided they want to kill themselves, and all of a sudden a voice says, do you want to do this? And
are you sure?
Well, I'll say, are you sure?
Are you sure?
Yeah.
And they might give them pause to think,
right,
maybe
exactly.
Call somebody else. And if the apparatus can be disengaged when you want to carry it out somewhere, you know, for protection on the outside, then that's also a plus.
Yeah,
and then, you know, if somebody's breaking into your house and you fear for your life, you hear somebody breaking in, you can engage that weapon and say, yes, I'm sure, and you have to pull the trigger again. You'd be ready for them when they come up the stairs or into what kind of a confrontation you might be
right.
in.
Thanks, Gary. Right. Appreciate that. Thank you for that. That's, you know, Gary had a lot of thoughts there.
Yeah.
A lot of scenarios he's run through his head.
Yeah.
And they seem to work. I mean, they seem to support the gun shy.
Yeah. Now, one thing I'll say is you need to install it on the firearm with each use. So this is nothing that stays installed on the firearm, but you, the idea is you would put it on the firearm before you think you might use it. And then, again, you were asked, are you sure when you...
Wait, so it's not like a... So it's not like a computer program that you put it on, you have to do it each time?
Well, it's a physical device. It's very heavy, makes the gun difficult to wield. So you wouldn't want it on there all the time.
Oh. Okay, 312-981-7200. We'll take, let's go to the news. We got the news coming up here. We'll take a break and get to the news. We have a couple more people on the line, and I've got a slew of texts. Some great questions, a lot about the science and voice recognition software and a lot of things. It seems like a lot of people have some really good insight and intel into this issue, voice modulation, changing voices, question about bilingual voices, a lot going on here. So we will get to all those questions here. The gun shy is this week's frying pan. It is a mechanism you put on your gun that when you fire, it says, are you sure? And then you say yes or no, and it continues with the process. Steve Gadlin is in studio with us. We will take a break. When we come back, more.
Oh, there's a wicked young man cooking slowly in a frying pan.
There it is, a frying pan. A new song. Thanks, Pete Zimmerman. It's a download here on WGN Radio. Steve Gadlin is here. He's the man behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He's got a lot of great ideas that he workshops here on WGN before he brings it to his principal investor, Mark Cuban, after he won on the show Shark Tank. Steve, tonight's idea is the gun shy. Why don't you refresh everybody's memory?
Yeah, so here's the thing. I care about my fellow man. That's this idea boiled down to a nutshell. What that means, the gun shy is a device that you hook up to your firearm so that when you fire it, whether on purpose or on accident, it will say to you in a loud, clear voice, are you sure? To which it will not fire until it hears a clear yes. Anything else, either through background noise or someone else shouting, it won't respond to. It will respond to yes or no. No will disable it for 20 minutes.
Oh, okay. That's a new wrinkle.
If it hears no, it disables the weapon for 20 minutes and it cannot be fired. You know, what it does is it gives you pause. It gives you important pause because firing a firearm is a life-altering event, no matter how and when it happens.
Okay, let's check the phones because there's one question that I've gotten several texts about, and John, who's on the line, John is asking the same question. John, yay or nay to the gun shy?
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to give it a nay. I certainly appreciate the intention of gun safety, but a lot of people would have a handgun for a threatening situation. And what if the person that has put you in a threatening situation is the one that answers no, and then your firearm, your handgun right. won't fire, and you end up in a bad spot because of that. And a secondary thought to that is that split second in a threatening situation between yes or no, if the person, you know, across from you, so to say, has a handgun, that could cost you your life.
Oh,
so
right.
those are my
John, that's a great. Those are great questions. Thank you so much for that, Steve. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I've got a couple responses. One, I hope it's more than a split second. I hope you really take a few seconds to think about your answer before you shout into the firearm, because again, firing a weapon is always very serious. Second, you know, good and bad will come out of this, right? More good than bad. So yes, I can imagine a situation where you are holding your gun and you fire it at an intruder and the gun says, "Are you sure?" And the intruder shouts "No" before you can shout "Yes," thereby disabling your weapon for 20 minutes.
It sounds a little bit like a hiccup, or what we would call like a quirk, or, you know, they say in the video games, it's like in Wreck-It Ralph,
well,
there's an
anticipated casualty.
Right.
That's what I, you know, it's.
That's not what it. A glitch.
A glitch.
Glitch. No, that's the word I was looking for.
I'd
glitch.
Say, no, the intent of the device is still the same. There will be, you know, it won't work out in every situation. It's not perfect for every situation, but it's perfect in more situations than it's not perfect for. I think the net gain will be a positive one with this device.
Okay.
You know, how many, you can't say, oh, no, now someone accidentally is hurt with this device, when you think of how many people are accidentally hurt without a device like
right.
this.
So you're saying that it just might be unintended consequence.
Well, intended, because we're anticipating it.
Yeah, but it's a glitch in the way that, you know, there's a way that someone can almost, like, shortcut it. Or,
you know,
I
call a glitch a marketing opportunity. Yeah. And, again, this is a pitch to the investors, so I would never,
I would never
highlight it as a glitch. I'd highlight it as an opportunity and a new market, perhaps.
312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're talking about the gun shy. Let's get to some of these texts. 708 has a good question. What drives the mechanism? A battery? Does it have an override for a dead battery, or is it more like a wind-up toy?
Well, it's actually, it has a Bluetooth connection to your phone. So what it'll do is use this technology to piggyback off of that.
Okay. 773's got a question. I'm bilingual. Mm-hmm. What if I answer yes, no, or holy crap in Spanish?
You will want to purchase the gun shy in your native language, or in the language you think you may default to in a stressful situation. Mm-hmm. Because, well, with Spanish, the word no is the word no in both languages. But it will only understand the language that it is, the version that you purchase. So you'll want to be careful with that.
The other question, which is surprising we haven't gotten to yet, is how much does this device cost?
That's a great question. We have two models. We have an outright purchase for $10,000, where you own the unit. But what we think is more attractive to our potential consumers is a monthly subscription. So you sign up for it, and as so long as you are successfully billed monthly, it will continue to function. But you'll want to make sure you keep the one thing that can happen if your payment goes through is it can start firing without even pulling the trigger.
Mm.
So you want to
make,
yeah, let's just, again,
another glitch.
Well, not a, possibly a glitch, but it's something we're working on.
All right, let's go to the phones. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Corey. Corey, yay or nay on the what's the name of this? This is
the gun shy.
The gun shy. I'm sorry, gun shy. Corey, you there?
What was that? Yeah, I'm here. I didn't catch your question.
So no, I was just I blanked a little bit on the name of it, but yay or nay on the gun shy?
I would say nay, but there's a really easy way to get around that whole yes or no or an intruder yelling no thing. And that's just to take no out of the equation and make it you have to say yes for it to work.
Well,
that's
a great question. Thank
you. Say nothing,
yes.
Or say no, nothing else matters.
Corey, that is fantastic. Thank you for that.
You know, he's quoting a Metallica song. I don't know if that's intentional, but we do have a metallic finish model.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
it's
just
close,
to bring up.
Yeah.
the thing with no, though, is the reason we have that in there is so that you can disable your weapon for 20 minutes, because we want you to have the opportunity not to just say, you know, nothing and not fire the weapon, but to say firmly no, meaning this was a mistake to pull out my firearm. Mm-hmm. Weapon, please disable yourself for 20 minutes to prevent anyone who, you know, any mischief or accident.
Well, let me ask, this is a great one. 773 may have an addition here. It just says, why don't you just add voice pattern recognition software to defeat the quote-unquote glitch?
Yeah, that's actually an idea that I had and something that I'm working on. We do have a version with that matches your vocal tones using a, you know, what this person said, voice recognition software.
Yeah, recognition, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm working on. So, the that will be an option that we will have.
Okay, well, let's go to Arnie. Arnie, yay or nay on the gun shy?
Nay, and I'll tell you why. I think it's about time we change the Second Amendment. Have a vote in this country. It's more important than voting for a president.
Arnie, I got to cut you off right there. We're not making this political. I'm sorry. I want to make a statement right now. This is not a political segment. This is about an invention. Arnie, I'm sure you have great ideas, and I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be rude. But that, you know, that's not where we're going with this. I don't think, Stephen, I'm sorry to... I don't know. I just feel like that's not what you're trying to do. And so thank you, Arnie. I appreciate it. But
well, regardless of the politics of it, regardless of what the nation should be like, we're creating a product to deal with what the nation is like.
Mm-hmm. So now, right.
Yeah, this is how things are now. So, you know, I'd love to be idealistic like Arnie. But what I'd rather do now is capitalize on our insecurities now and turn those into dollars for my investors.
312-981-7200. When we come back, we'll take a break. When we come back, we will get to some of the more colorful texts that have come in about the idea, the gun shy, Steve Gadlin's frying pan idea for this week. Stay with us. There's a wicked young man cooking slowly in a frying pan. It's the frying pan as we wrap up the gun shy. A new idea from inventor Steve Gadlin. Many a text to get through. This is the time where we kind of go through more of the colorful stuff that may not necessarily be constructive, but at least gives you an idea of what people are saying. Mm-hmm. Before we do that, why don't we clear the phone? So why don't we go to Brandon? Brandon, yay or nay on the gunshot?
It's every time I hear this guy, I mean, I saw him on Shark Tank, so I know this is real, but otherwise, I would think that, like, it's a bit. Like, nobody would buy this for their own gun.
Well, what would I'm trying to solve the gun control issue with technology instead of policy. What do you even see as the alternative here, Brandon?
Well, one thing you could do is where you have to pull the trigger twice or three times.
Well, how do you remember? Is it twice? Is it three times? It sounds like a lot to think about if you're in a stressful situation.
No, you would know. I need to pull it twice. You would know that already. But and I don't mean to sound mean, but I was just laughing so hard my tears were coming out of my eyes. You said it's $10,000?
Well, how much is a firearm? I don't know. I'm asking you honestly because I've never purchased one.
And then you said, and you just got to make sure that you keep paying your bill. Otherwise, it could accidentally fire on its own.
Look,
why would it fire on its own if you didn't pay your bill?
Because
that's
the
terrible design flaw.
Because of the Bluetooth technology, it's using your phone to check and see if the bill is paid. And I'm saying, if it returns.
If the bill's not paid, why wouldn't it just, if anything, just disable the weapon? Why would it spontaneously fire?
I'm saying, the technology is tricky. It's tricky technology.
Thank you, Brandon. Brandon's enjoying this.
If you don't pay your car bill, the car might start on its own and drive away.
All right, there we go, Brandon. Thank you, Brandon. Thanks for the call.
The thing that the invention that you came up with that it makes your laundry, if your clothes are dirty, then it sets off a stink bomb and makes your clothes smell if they're dirty.
It's very similar to that. Well, thanks, Brandon. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. That was pretty good. I mean, Brandon had a lot to say there.
Well, I'm glad Brandon's been listening.
Yeah, he doesn't believe in you.
No,
but that's okay.
Look, all I can say is, when I came up with stick figure cat drawings, everybody thought I was an idiot and a fool. Mm-hmm. But a little billionaire named Mark Cuban invested in that product, and he's made some money on that. You know, so So all of these ideas, you know, I just ask for Brandon's patience, and I just don't think he's really thinking them through the way I am. I'm an inventor.
All right, let's go through some of these texts real quick. Let me see here. 309 says this is the quickest way to get sued. Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it's the quickest way to keep something from happening that you mm-hmm. really don't want to have happen.
630 says this guy's clearly an idiot. 773 says, why do you bring him in every week? Total screwball. That's interesting.
Yeah.
309 says, I love that this guy's on a Chicago radio station trying to convince people to think twice before shooting a bad guy.
Well, exactly. And I think that's important. You know, and I'm not talking about thinking twice about shooting a bad guy. I'm thinking about thinking twice about firing a gun, period.
Okay. 563 says, are you sure you shouldn't find a new career because inventor isn't working for you?
Well, that's his opinion. I think inventors work just fine for me. I've come up with many inventions, and I feel great about them.
Okay. Let's see what else we have here. I've got a couple of good ones I want to get to. 563 says, did he come into the studio with a stupid cake on his shoulder? That was referring to last week.
Well, I tell you, I'm going to leave the studio with a Krabby cake.
Right.
Crab cake on my shoulder.
815 says, yeah, great idea, genius.
Thanks. Well, that's great.
Right.
We
no, there's
stop.
More. There's more. Okay. It's going to work great with the thugs and gangbangers in this city.
Well,
so.
Thank you. So this person actually sees the benefit yeah. of this. That's great.
The bad guy can just yell no, question mark.
Yes.
You are terrible.
Okay.
Let's see. Okay.
I mean, we keep saying the bad guy, but that's just from our perspective. And I tell you, I don't believe that there are good guys and bad guys. I believe everyone's motivation is self-serving, okay? Mm-hmm. So these people that we're calling bad guys aren't really bad guys. They're just people with different motivations. And, you know, maybe if we all take a minute, are you sure? Take a minute to breathe and really answer that question. We'll get to know people as, instead of abstract labels like good guy or bad guy, mm-hmm. maybe we'll get to know them by their first name. And oh my gosh, you know what happens then? Friendships are formed.
773 says, of all the ideas you've pitched
this
on
the
frying
the,
pan,
the one they're happiest.
Has Mark Cuban been interested in any of them?
Well, none of these have ever made it to Mark Cuban. The whole concept of this segment is it's, you know, the users need the listeners. Need to support, you know, this is where I beta test. And when mm-hmm. I get an idea that that really sails, then I'm going to go to him again. I'll say, hey, remember me. I'm the guy with the cat drawings. But I really need that confidence to approach him.
Right, right. Well, 708 may give you a glimmer
okay.
of hope.
Okay.
708 says, I think responsible gun owners would purchase this.
Great.
And then she follows up and says, P.S., those that are bad-mouthing Steve haven't invented anything.
That's right. Thank you. They, you know, maybe they've invented discord and disharmony, but what I'm out to do is save lives, make people happy, make lives easier, and win over Rob Martyr as a customer for at least one of my products.
Well, I will say Martyr has been listening, and I don't. He's usually a nay vote, so I don't know if this would. But I just would say that Steve, you know, you got a lot of nays, and I think Brandon summed it up with the, just thought the sort of how asinine he thought you were. And
I thought
laughed for
Brandon was on drugs or something. He just was giggling uncontrollably.
Right. Well, that, I mean, I don't know if this was a win. I do think it's an interesting thing, and I will say I do agree that you really had an altruistic thought, and this was
okay, look, it's
something.
Been 5 years since I've been on Shark Tank, and I haven't come to Mark Cuban with one new idea since then, and I just need a win, okay? I need a win. I need something to bring him because stick figure cat drawings were selling great 3 years ago, but you know what? They're not so hot right now, so I just need an idea that clicks. I need an idea that clicks. I need something to work.
Well, keep at it. I think that you're getting closer. Steve Gadlin, I want to draw a cat for you.com. Thanks for being here, bud.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that's it for the download. be back on, I know we'll be back on Tuesday because Monday the Hawks play, so we won't be here, but Tuesday. I think I got you there.
Got me here.
There you go.
There I am.
Matt Bubala's in for Patty Vasquez. I didn't even know that. Good to see you, buddy.
How are you? Good to see you. Good, man. How are you doing?
Good. So what do you got on the show today?
We're going to have some fun. We'll keep it kind of Patty-like. Okay. Keep it kind of Patty-like. We're talking Susan Sarandon's cleavage with Heidi Stevens from your Tribune.
Oh, good.
Piers Morgan got all over Susan Sarandon after the Screen Actors Guild. Because she pulled, did you see what she pulled a full Sue Ellen Mischke?
Yeah. She looked good.
Bra and blazer. Yeah. At 69. She's 69.
That, I think, was the bigger part of that story. I didn't know she was so old.
Well, that's terrible, Justin.
Well, she's I had no idea. When I saw the story after, like, 69 years old with his cleavage. You Susan Sarandon, 69 years old? I would have thought she would have been, like, maybe 61.
Yeah.
But what do I know?
But she's rocking a full-on bra and blazer
good, man.
At the Screen Actors Guild. Now, the issue was, so... Hey, good for you, Susan. Let them fly. Good. Excellent. She introduced the in memoriam.
Right. Oh, that's a good
And so
point,
then Piers Morgan goes, oh, that's tacky. And so there was some battle back and forth. We'll talk with Heidi about that. And a friend of ours, a reporter from the Wall Street Journal, Elizabeth Bernstein, wrote about this huge study that was done about sexual satisfaction in couples that have been together at least 3 years.
Valentine's Day style.
It is a little bit. So it was interesting, the study that found out what makes men and women happy and how common it actually surprisingly is. So we'll talk about all of that. And in the 1 o'clock hour, so start getting your mellow on. We're going to try to explain or get explained to us gravitational waves.
I said the same thing. I'm like, I don't feel like I paid any attention in science class when I saw that story.
Oh, dude, I so sucked at science class once I got past like fourth grade.
Right, right, right.
And high school was just like
not
torture.
Good. It was torture.
But now I really wish I would have learned a lot of this stuff.
Well,
you know,
that's
now as an
nice
adult,
for,
you get
right?
all excited. So now I'm reading all these stories and I'm still like, I so need to be like stoned or something. What? I don't know how you grasp this, but it's not just like, you know, drinking Evian. It's like LSD
and
or
a lot,
something.
And I read what I was interested in was that Albert Einstein was right. That's essentially what this whole story is about.
Yeah,
right?
It's the final element of his whole thing being proved correct is what they're saying. Yeah. And somebody wrote about this on social media today and was like, think about this. No calculators, no internet, no nothing. Him and a pencil and a piece of chalk. And he like nailed all this stuff. Think about that. Think about that.
I like it.
You didn't
right.
even get to read Wikipedia to figure any of that out.
I love it, man. You're jacked up. This is going to be a good show.
We'll
right,
see.
Have a great weekend, man.
Thanks. You too, buddy.